Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Drew. 35, 30.
Oh, get no punch. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Draft later tonight, the Giants will be selecting the 9th overall pick. We are nearing the end of the speculation game. We are nearing the end of a bazillion different mock drafts, and we can finally get to business. It's nice to know that at this time tomorrow, Paul, we'll actually be able to discuss a real-life player being added to the Giants roster.
Indeed we will. And, you know, when you opened the show, you said it's a Thursday edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. No, it is the 2015 first-round NFL Draft Day edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. And as I said on WFAN just a short time ago, it is like New Year's Eve in Times Square. Count down the ball. It's time to get a pick.
And we will be taking your phone calls, your tweets. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. If you can't get to a phone, you can certainly chime in on Twitter. So here's what we have for you today. Yesterday, we did our mock draft with the fans where you called in and went through every pick leading up to the Giants at number 9. Paul and I are going to give you our own mock draft, and we're going to give you an idea of where we think the Giants will go, what direction they'll go at the 9th overall selection. Art Stapleton, who covers the Giants for the Record, he'll join us at the bottom of the hour. He'll weigh in on what he's hearing, and we'll also go around the roster for the Giants to discuss some other prevalent topics as well. And then Anita Marks, who obviously weighs in on the show each and every week, she'll be joining us live from Chicago. She has spoken to a number of different rookies who are likely going to go in the top 10, so we'll get her perspective on that as well.
And, you know, it's funny because we've been talking about how volatile the top 10 is going to be for several weeks now, Lance, and it's hot and heavy this morning. If you've been watching NFL Network at all since breakfast time, and I know you've been up, and certainly, hey, I didn't sleep anyway.
Well, we know that.
It has really started to cook. And one of the premier rumors that's out there right now, and obviously, again, we're not substantiating anything at the moment, but it's certainly a topic for conversation, is how much is Philadelphia coach Chip Kelly going to pay to move up and get the number 2 pick from Tennessee to draft Marcus Mariota? People have told me, people around the league have told me, they expected this for quite a while now, that Kelly will pay whatever it takes, and he will overpay. It would probably something, and here's what I was told. Somebody this morning from the league I was talking to said, don't be surprised if the deal is one of those where the Titans pick a guy at 2, it's Mariota, and then Kelly picks the guy the Titans want,
Makes sense.
They flop those guys, much like, it turned out the Giants and Eli with the Rivers thing in San Diego. They'll each pick a guy who'll be traded during the course of the day or the night. The draft is tonight. And then the picks will be thrown into it. What I've been told is that you could expect at least 3 draft picks. Next year's 1, this year's 2, and probably a 3rd, if not even a conditional that might move up to a 2nd. And that's a lot, but Tennessee, from what I've been told, they're going to try to squeeze Kelly for everything he's worth because they know he desperately wants Mariota. And apparently everybody around the league understands that, and they're kind of having a good chuckle at the Eagles getting into their own bidding war at the moment to see if they can get this kid.
Essentially against themselves, though.
In a way.
In what they're doing by bidding against themselves because clearly everybody, like you said, knows Chip Kelly likes Marcus Mariota, so Tennessee obviously knows that, and they're going to do everything they can to milk Philadelphia if that trade goes down. Plus, it would make sense for them to have to part ways with a number of different items, considering yesterday, as we mentioned on this program, ESPN is reporting that the Browns have had discussions with the Titans,
right,
in which they would have to cough up both of their first-round selections, the 12th and the 19th slots.
Now, you know what's funny? Again, in my conversations with people in the last 24 hours, they told me that's not to go get the quarterback. That the Browns are looking to move up because they potentially want either Cooper or they want to go defense, and they might try to see if they can grab Williams at the number two pick. And that, you know, the quarterback is not the reason they'd be jumping, which, you know, again, whether or not you think Johnny Manziel's the answer, I don't. I mean, that's going to change your perspective on what you think about those plans.
Well, if I'm Cleveland and I look at the roster right now, Paul, I look at other areas that they need to upgrade.
They need a lot.
They necessarily go into the quarterback department.
They do. They need a lot. And I'm not a Manziel guy. But nonetheless, they're in a position where they also want to make some kind of splash because they made a splash last year and the guy flamed out because of a bunch of issues. So now, potentially, they're saying to themselves, and again, we're just throwing this out there, not trying to validate anything, but they could be saying to themselves, you know what, we had egg on our faces. We made the big splash with Johnny Football, and it didn't work out quite right. So maybe we got to make another big splash this year, and we really got to show the people of Cleveland that we've got something to cheer about. And so I could see them doing that, especially having two number ones. I could see them moving up to make the splash, to say, okay, guess what? I know that one didn't work out so well for the time being, but look what we just did now. You know, raise the pom-poms and cheer for us now because we got you a superstar.
Absolutely. In terms of the other reports that we're seeing online, Sports Illustrated is reporting that the Browns are also interested in perhaps acquiring Sam Bradford from the Philadelphia Eagles. That maybe that's something that they could try to do.
A three-way?
In addition. No, this would be a separate deal they're talking about.
Think about that, though. Think about that. If Cleveland and Philly and Tennessee could all get together, there could be some kind of three-way deal there. That could work.
That's obviously feasible as well. But the right now, the way that Sports Illustrated is talking about it, it's a separate deal as opposed to what may go down with Tennessee. So certainly a lot of rumors are out there. It's not a surprise. That's what tends to happen on draft day. What we're going to do is we're going to open up the phone lines here nice and early. We want to try to get to as many calls as possible before, as I mentioned, Art Stapleton will join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll have Anita Mark second hour, and then Paul and I will take you through our mock draft. So we're ready to dig deep into a variety of different subjects over the course of the next 2 hours. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Let's start things off. Owen is in Texas. Owen, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing? I'm a first-time caller from Austin, Texas. I've been watching y'all for about 2 years now. This is when I was 16 years old. I'm a big fan. Thank y'all for what you do.
Appreciate that.
Thanks
so much for listening and watching. So what do you have for us, Owen?
I've gone back and forth about who I want the Giants to draft, and I think Paul DeTino has finally nailed the nail in the piece of wood for me to get Brandon Scherff. For a long time I was wanting Trey Waynes just because I think he's the better like prospect in general. But I don't know. I think Brandon Scherff is probably going to be what takes us to the playoffs instead of Trey Waynes.
You don't have to convince the guy to the right of me that's going to be the case. So, Owen, you got in the good graces of Paul DeTino with call number one being in support of Brandon Scherff. Congratulations, you are now number one in his book.
Yeah, but you know what? You also got another high five from me because you like Trey Waynes second on your selection process, and I'm the same way.
Thank you. I've heard a lot about Amari Cooper, and I don't know. I think he's a very good player, but I'm not seeing it as a good idea for the Giants. This, I've heard y'all talk about how that's like putting too much stock into one position, and I completely agree. I also have another question. You don't have to answer this right now. You can answer it another time, of course. Obviously, this is probably not the right day to do it. But I'm 18 years old. I'm trying to figure out what I want to do with my life, and what y'all do is, I love it. I want to get into it. I was wondering how y'all got into it so I could start somewhere. Thank you all for your call. I'll take your call offline.
Sounds good, Owen. Appreciate the phone call. Well, Paul Dottino can give you an entire dissertation on that subject because he's been in this business a lot longer than I have. Nile, it looks like we may have a dial tone here on our end. So if we can get on top of that to bring down the level, certainly appreciate that as we take care of that. But getting back to the subject matter in terms of broadcasting, we may have to save that for another program, but I'm sure you have some thoughts on this.
I would only say this. I've been doing this now over 30 years, and things have changed an awful lot since when I first got into the business. So I don't know that a lot of the things or rules that I could give you or hints that I could give you would apply right now, because this business has really been turned on its ear with the electronic media and with the advent of webcasting. It's a different animal than in the days of Fred Flintstone, Yabba Dabba Doo.
VCRs and all the other types of items that were around when Tito started out. I'll just say on a serious note, to answer Owen's question real quick, considering his age, and it looks like he's ready to enter college, find a program and find a school that teaches journalism or has some type of a broadcast entity so that you get real-life hands-on experience.
Without a doubt.
Before you get into the real world.
Make sure they have a really good university radio station. That's a big key. You don't want to go somewhere where the radio station's kind of like unofficial or like a club kind of thing. You want to know that you're going to a radio station that treats it as a professional station. I went to Fordham. WFUV doesn't get any better than that in the New York metropolitan area.
So you didn't have to rely on two cups and a string to
no,
get out of the airwaves, right?
No, we had everything you needed to have, and it was cool.
I wasn't sure, so I just wanted to make sure about that. 201-939-4513, the telephone number. Let's move along here on the phone lines. Vic joins us from Florida. Vic, what's happening?
Hello.
All right. How are you guys doing this afternoon?
We're doing all right, Vic. How about yourself?
Okay. Did you guys get a chance to watch the Mike Mayock's draft last night?
I did monitor it throughout the course of the evening.
I'm aware of what he did. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's say, hypothetically, the draft is going that way. Sheriff is already with the Giants. Now we're talking about the second round. It leaves guys like Shane Ray, Eric Rowe, Shaq Thompson, Double O, got a few other guys, Eddie Goldman, Ronald Darby, cornerback from Florida State. Who would you go after in the second round at number 40?
Well, I think the first thing you have to understand, Vic, is what they're going to do with number one. If you agree that Sheriff is the guy at number one, then I don't think you're going to put an offensive lineman on the board at number two. However, if Sheriff does not turn out to be the guy at one and they don't take another offensive lineman there, I have to tell you, I think because of the value of second and third round offensive linemen in this draft and the fact that the Giants need one, it's almost imperative to me that they would take an old lineman in round two if they don't get one in round one.
I would think in the first two rounds you want to at least address that position, if not necessarily finding a starter, Paul, but at least for depth purposes to get somebody young on a rookie contract. And if they do get the offensive lineman, let's go under the other hypothetical that Vic laid out. Let's say Sheriff is taken at number nine. Then it becomes, okay, what position do you prioritize in round two?
Well, you're strictly, again, you're going for value, and there is a value that meets need with guys like Eric Rowe, the defensive back from Utah. If P.J. Williams is sitting there, you know, the Florida State corner who projects as a free safety, he will probably be on the board right around 40. And the value is potentially as a late first rounder, but remember, there were some issues that came out about him, even though he was cleared and the DUI thing was dropped. The police said that the other day. There's a good chance he's going to be there at 40. So that's the kind of guy you probably could say, hey, value meets need there too. And I could see them taking a guy like that.
Shaq Thompson was thrown out by Vic.
I think he's a strong safety, and I think he's probably a better steal in the third round than he is at number 40.
I would agree with you, too. I think there's a potential to get him in the third round. Now, that's not to say that maybe the Giants go in the direction of a safety, just somebody different.
Right.
He's not necessarily at the level where, do I put him at linebacker, do I put him at safety? That's the biggest conversation surrounding Shaq Thompson. Maybe you go after a Randall out of Arizona State, who's a free safety, who would be good value, and at the same time, Paul, would also fill a void that appears currently on the roster in terms of having more of strong safeties as opposed to free safeties.
Yes, I agreed with that. And that's one of the things you want to keep in mind when you're looking at the safety crop and you're trying to figure out, you know, there are some second and third rounders in there. You also want to keep in mind that there are a few of these converted corners that you're looking at as free safeties. And there's one benefit to drafting a guy like that, and that is if he's got pretty good corner skills and he's kind of on the fringe as being an NFL corner, well, what you do is you draft him there, and you kind of work him in there first when he gets to training camp. And you say, okay, look, let's see if you can, in fact, become a good corner in this league, because the fallback is always will now make you a safety. So in a way, it's kind of like hedging your bet on a game of 21, you know, splitting up your cards, because there's a possibility if the guy is close enough as a potential starter in the league as a corner, you can always hedge him and turn him into a safety. You don't just throw him into the safety spot right away, because obviously if he turns out to be like, wow, he could really play corner, well, then you got a bonus, because then you got a corner higher than you thought you were going to get.
And you could always move him back to corner
sure.
in the event that you threw him out to safety, so he could be your backup corner on top of that. And it goes back to the conversations we had the other day when you're just trying to get the best five offensive linemen on the field.
Yeah.
In this day and age, with so many wide receivers going wide and four and three
That's
wide receiver
a great point,
sets,
Lance.
If you have the extra corner, you try to get him out on the field as a safety potential.
And how much of a benefit is it that you would have an extra defensive back who can play corner and safety type things, so that when he's out there, you're basically saying we're going to put five or six DBs out there, and you're not sure as an offensive coordinator which guy's playing what scheme or what kind of style he's going to play on a given play, because, oh, he can play safety and play corner. So where's he going?
Is he going to go to the outside as a corner? Is he going to be the
slot
guy? Is he
picking up the slot guy?
Is he going to be
back
playing in coverage?
Safety? What is he doing?
So you can get creative that way.
That's a pretty cool thing to have. So these combo guys who you think can be corners and safeties. And, I was talking to somebody the other day about this, and I said, you know, we stressed yesterday the offensive line and how guards and centers a lot of times can move in, and how tackles can sometimes move the guard, and those are very valuable. The second position in the NFL that has that transition-type value is the corner safety.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Vic, appreciate the phone call. Let's go to Ahmad in New Jersey. Ahmad, what's happening?
Oh, listen. I was listening to what you guys are discussing, but I know the Giants don't go after that, I think, the guard from Iowa.
Brandon Sheriff.
Right, and he's a good pick. But if he's not available, I will go after Todd Gurley from Georgia as a running back.
Really?
Why is that? Why would you go after Gurley?
Because Jennings has suffered an injury, and the Williams kid from Boston College, he tap danced too much in the backfield. He doesn't really hit the hole right. I understand he led the nation one time at Boston College, but he's not that fit for them. Now, if you don't get Gurley, I like Yeldon maybe the third or fourth round from Alabama.
Well, I mean, I understand where you're going at in terms of Jennings and him having to go through his fair share of injuries in year number one. Now, Williams is a very young running back, so the narrative is incomplete. Keep that in mind, Ahmad, when you start just judging him based on the very small sample size. They also brought in Shane Vereen. Let's not forget about that. I see options.
Okay.
I see depth at running back right now. If I'm going to go by need, I'm not talking about best overall talent, because Gurley's a tremendous talent, tremendous athleticism, versatility. If I'm going to go by need, meaning that if I draft a guy at number 9, I know he's going to get on the field, I wouldn't necessarily look at the running back position as the best chance to immediately get on the field if I were to take a running back at number 9.
And quite frankly, when you're talking about the Giants backs, don't forget Darqua as the back end of the depth chart guy. He looks like he's got some skills.
Mm-hmm. But I still like this. I like the guard from Iowa first.
Okay.
But I'm just
no argument
like,
there.
Just say hypothetically in that third or fourth round, if you can get Yeldon from Alabama, or maybe, because I doubt if Vic Beasley going to be around, he's going to be going in the first round as a linebacker, because the Giants need safeties too. And that's where London Collins come at from Alabama.
Well,
you can get him in the third round.
And there's another guy at 40. You know, there was so much talk a couple of months ago that Collins might be a top 10 guy, and people were trying to associate him with the Giants strictly out of need, not necessarily out of value. Subsequent to that, a lot of people have said now, you know, he's in the mid-20s. He's quite a ways down near the end of the first round. But let me ask you this. If all of a sudden he were to drop it to the second and he's sitting there at 40, you have to feel value need would certainly make you open your eyes to him.
Well, you go back to what you said yesterday, Paul, and Ahmad, appreciate the phone call. If you have, you know, you were talking about separation in the cluster of players.
Yeah.
If you get to, let's say, round two, and you had a first-round grade for a guy, he's still on the board.
It's going to be very difficult not to take him.
I don't think there would be much hesitation.
No, I don't think so either. No, and regardless of position, and, you know, again, Collins happens to be at a position the Giants are thin at. So, I mean, I don't think Collins is going to get the 40. Let me make something very clear. I think he's going to be late first round and then maybe early in the 30s in the second round. I don't think he gets to 40. I don't think anybody believes that. But if he does, you know, you talk about somebody who drops. There's a guy who, if he drops in round two, you got yourself a really nice value.
And that's what the draft is all about, value as well as need. And, you know, the other thing that I wanted to mention, the last caller Ahmad brought up, perhaps them grabbing a running back in the later rounds. They took Andre Williams in the fourth round. Talk about great value. We're talking about a Heisman Trophy candidate in the middle of the draft. It would not surprise me, Paul, if we get to round five or six and the Giants grab a running back.
Well, you know, that is one of the positions where as you get down into the second, third, fourth rounds, there are a lot of guys who have make it grades on them, Lance. I mean, you know, I personally did not look, and as you can see, I'm all blank here. I did not look or make comments on films on running back because, quite honestly, that's not a position that I'm going to draft if I'm the Giants. I looked at about 120 players on film, studied, researched, did workups on. I did not do any running backs, and I'm not afraid to tell you that because I just didn't think that it would apply to the team that we cover.
There's,
and, you know, but there are a lot of second and third round backs.
There's also a tremendous amount of depth at that position.
Sure.
That's another reason why I think you get to round four, you get to round five, if a running back's there and you think that he's got starting potential, even complementary potential, you know, it's worth at least thinking about that. Coming into this draft, and I'll go back to last year's storyline. Last year's storyline was tremendous depth at wide receiver.
Right.
You can wait. You're going to get a starting quality wide receiver. This year, I think running back can be even with that type of a storyline.
Well, again, a lot of make it players. Had the Giants not signed Shane Vereen, I would tell you right now, a guy I was excited about before free agency started was Duke Johnson of Miami as a scat back. I was thinking to myself that he's got a lot of tools that would fit well into this offense. But when the Giants signed Vereen, they filled that spot. And so that didn't become a need anymore.
In terms of a guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield and so forth, has some versatility. Let's head back to the phone lines. Mitchell is in Florida. Mitchell, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, thank you guys for answering my call.
Sure.
I've just been looking at the latest mock draft, and I know everybody wants Brandon Scherf. But I think depending on how the first eight or seven picks go, we might not even see him. We might not even see him in when we get a ninth. I don't even want him. If we're taking a tackle, Andres Pete, I like better. He's bigger. He's going to be a tackle. We could put Fugue in if that's what we're looking to do with Scherf. As far as the size, Andres Pete is the Giants that I've seen rumors and read articles how the Giants view him, taking him in the first round. And if they would have to do that, it's being that the Giants would have to trade back. So as far as Andres Pete, if we do take a tackle, I would like, you know, Andres Pete.
Well, I'm not sure that I got a little confused. Did you say you want them to trade back and to take Pete? Is that what you were asking? Or you're saying you just want to take Pete at nine? I'm not sure I get it.
No, that's what I've been hearing lately from Bleacher Report, from NFL Network. They've been talking about Andres Pete to the Giants.
Well, he is one of the best offensive linemen in the draft, and if you believe that the Giants need a starting caliber offensive lineman, he's one of the names that's going to come up. Now,
said in order to get him, the Giants at the ninth, picking him at ninth would be a little too high for the Giants. For Andres Pete, and said if the Giants really like him, the Giants would have to trade down if that's something they're willing to do and get more picks and get like an Andres Pete.
Well, Mitchell, I don't mean to cut you off, but keep in mind that we'll let you continue. You know, when you say that they'd have to trade back to get that type of a player, it depends on how much the team values that player.
Right.
If the team has that player very high on its draft board and feels that it's sufficient to take that player at number nine, they don't have to worry about trading back. They don't have to worry about what the speculation is.
What's my favorite word? It starts with a C. Conviction. If you have conviction about the guy, You don't fuss around with moving down. You just take it.
You grab him. And that's what it comes down to.
They said the reason why they're scared to move down, well, is because the Rams at number 10 might take him. The Rams love Andres Pete.
Well, Mitchell, you just answered your own question. That's what we're referring to. The fact is, if they're concerned that he's going to go a little bit later on and you move down, all of a sudden you're out of position to grab him. So that's more of a reason if you love him and you like him, you take him at number 9 and you'll lose sleep over
exactly.
It.
And I just have one more question. I'm going to let you guys answer off the air. I think if the, like, the 9th pick, we should draft the Kentucky DN.
Dupree.
Yeah, Bud Dupree, 269 pounds, is going to come in. He's going to be starting. We can get an offensive line in the second round. We have T.J. Humming still on the board in the second round. We have a lot of good offensive tackles.
Okay, I'm going to let you answer one quick question for me, and then we're going to have to let you go because we want to get to some other calls. If Dupree comes to the Giants, where do you play him? Do you think he's a 4-3 defensive end, or do you think he's a 4-3 outside linebacker? Because you have to have that already figured out before you draft the guy. Where do you see him?
4-3 defensive end.
You do?
Yeah.
You're sure?
Yeah, for sure. Let him build up the size of strength. Yeah.
Okay, now understand he's going to have to beat out guys like JPP, Ayers, Kerry Wynn, Selvey, you know,
DeMondre Moore.
Where's he going to compete and beat out, you know, those guys for snaps? Who is he going to take a job from?
I think he could beat out Andre. Ayers. DeMondre Moore is not as strong as him.
Well, I don't see DeMondre Moore
putting on weight.
Yeah, but I don't see him. Mm-hmm. I don't see him being a bubble player at this stage of his career, still with so much potential that they think is untapped, and they still think there's a big upside for him. So I don't see him being in danger here as a bubble guy. And I think Robert Ayers, until he got hurt at the end of last season, may have been. The best free agent signing the Giants had last season.
He was one of the most effective pass rushers they had on the team. And appreciate the phone call, Mitchell. Thanks so much for weighing in. He was up there in sacks, and then unfortunately he got hurt.
So I don't really see that being a fit.
I think it'd be very difficult for any pass rusher. I'm not just classifying it to Bud Dupree to beat out currently who's on the roster, because I think that there's a lot of depth and a lot of internal options. Let's head back to the phone lines here, and we check in with Shakes in Maryland. Shakes, what's happening?
What's going on, fellas?
Doing well, Shakes. How about yourself?
Happy draft day. Happy draft.
Yeah,
same
you too,
to
Shakes.
You.
What are you doing tonight for the draft? You having a big party, big shindig, Shakes, or what?
No, I'm in Baltimore City. Everything shut down.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's my bad. I apologize.
No problem.
But we asked you yesterday if you were all good, and you said you were okay, so I'm glad to hear you're on the phone again.
Yeah, we're good. We just got curfews out here and everything, so
it's a little rough. We're glad to hear, though, that you and your family are doing well. That's what's most important.
Thank you. Of course, I want to talk about this draft, man, and y'all been talking about it a lot, so... I had wrote down some stuff that I wanted to address with y'all.
Well, actually, I thought you were going to call in to reminisce about Aaron Curry, but I guess I was just mistaken.
There you go.
And that's really cold. I just want you to know. It's about 70 degrees out, and he's throwing you a cold snowball.
Continue, Shakes. I can't recover from that one.
I would discuss the monsters with you, but I ain't going to go there.
Okay.
Fair enough.
All right, now... The second round, now you say, now if we don't go in the first round, we should go second round O-lineman. I don't think so. Because to me, I think that we need a guard. To me, my whole premise is we need a guard.
Yeah, but that's O-line, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, no, I thought you said a second.
Hear me out.
Okay, go ahead.
Hold on. Okay. Now, I think we need a guard. So when I look in this draft, I don't think guards are going off until the second round. So in the third round, it'll still be enough guards there to be had. That could go on day one. I'm talking about Ali Marbet might be there. I'm talking about Can might be there. Tomlinson might be there. Because when I look in the second round, I think that cornerbacks, running backs, wide receivers, and a few quarterbacks is going to go off the board in the second round. So in the third round, those guards are going to be had. So That's why I'm kind of disputing. If we don't go in the first round, we got to go in the second round. No, I don't think we do.
Well, let me say this to you, Shakes. You understand that every round you go, or if you, and we got to go quickly because we got somebody coming on out. Stapleton of the Record's going to be coming on with us. Let me just finish the answer to you while we get you off the air. Between Cann, Tomlinson, Jackson, if you think Marpet's going to be able to project to this higher level that quickly, all of those guys are going to be back on the rows, as Jerry Reese likes to call them. And every time you go back on a row, there's more dents on the fender. There's more rust on the chrome. And there's more polish you're going to need to use to get the guy to be pro-ready. And I think we've discussed already, the Giants are in a position where they need somebody to be pro-ready week one. And certainly by week four, I mean, you were willing to give them a little leeway and say, let the guy have
a month. Only based on the track record of previous offensive linemen. But yeah, if it's another position, Paul, it's a different story.
Now, the second and third round, especially now third round offensive linemen, again, you need the dent wizard to kind of pull out some of those dents. I'm not so sure that they're ready to start, you know, in September. And I think the Giants, they really need to do that.
Well, I mean, I think it really comes down to the position, Paul. That's where you have to look at, do you need that guy to step in week one, or do you have a little wiggle room where if you inserted them in week four or week five, could that necessarily, you know, change the narrative for your season and so forth? I think these are the types of things that have to enter the conversation whenever you're drafting somebody that high.
If you believe that the priority is really that high at the offensive line, then you do believe you've got to have somebody ready to start in week one. And then if you believe that, you've got to take him no later than pick 40.
Well, speaking of believing, I believe we have our guest on the phone lines, if that's a smooth transition there. Art Stapleton, who covers the Giants for the Record, kind enough to give us a few minutes here on draft day, a very busy time for just about anybody in the media. Art, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Fellas, what's going on? It's National Honesty Day. I didn't know if you guys knew that. So we could stop all the lying at around 8 o'clock tonight for all the teams and agents and players and prospects and really figure out what's going to happen now over the next couple days.
All right, I would love to agree with you, but there will be people lying throughout the course of the first round. Trust me. That's just the way it's going to be.
No doubt. No doubt, P-Dot. No doubt.
Hey, you know, it's funny, Art, because we have been talking now for months about – you know, who the Giants need, who the Giants want, who the Giants value. But, you know, ultimately, as we've seen this morning, and we've already talked about this, NFL Network's flying with all the potential trades that are going to happen in the top 10. From your perspective, what do you think will happen in the top 10 before the Giants that is going to shake up the apple cart and may, in fact, even wind up affecting who they pick?
Yeah, you know, I tweeted this a little earlier, the idea that you know, the two teams that could really affect, or at least the two spots that could affect the Giants most, are Washington at 5 and the Jets at 6. Because there's been all the talk about Washington wanting to move out of that spot. So you don't know who wants to move into that spot. But
right,
also there's talk of the Jets move back, the Jets move up. And if I'm the Giants and I look at those two spots, if I'm even thinking about, you know what, if Leonard Williams drops or if Amari Cooper drops or if Dante Fowler drops, if they have those guys as the apple of their eye, you know, do you really imagine the Giants trading with the Redskins or the Jets? Like, I know it's possible, but I just can't see that happening. So, you know, when I look at that draft, I think the biggest spot that will determine this draft will be 5, will be the Redskins. Because what they do, you know, if Brandon Scherff goes at 5 or at 6 with the Jets, I think that will definitely be a domino that can affect what the Giants have at 9.
Well, and Art, what you're just alluding to is perhaps the Giants going in the direction of an offensive lineman at number 9. So, you know, a two-part question here. We always hear the Giants stress best player available. If we're at least to categorize it based on need, where do you think the Giants need to prioritize going at number 9 in terms of at least addressing a specific position?
You know, I think that it's funny because we put all this emphasis on 9, and for good reason, and not to sidestep your question, Lance, but I really think what they do at 40 is connected to what they do at 9 in terms of need. You know, you don't have a safety sitting on the board in the first round that you would take in that spot, clearly. And I'm not even sure if they traded back in the teens that you would take a safety that high. You know, but if you look at the second round, I mean, if the Giants can get a cover safety, you know, a guy like Demarius Randall, who may not even be there in the second round, he may go late first round. You know, I'm looking at that as a need. You know, if you can put a Randall in that secondary with Nat Burhe, now all of a sudden what you do at nine, you know, your biggest priority is solved at safety for me. And you could find an offensive lineman to play with this team. So I wouldn't force an offensive lineman if I didn't have to. But I think if you're looking at a guy, you know, I've heard what Paul has said, and I completely agree. The idea that if you're going to get an offensive lineman...
Wait, Art, don't be blowing too much smoke up, you know what. You know, that could be very dangerous for this program. So be very careful.
You know what? I think that you need an offensive lineman if you're going to take an O-line at nine. You need a guy who's going to come in and make this group the five best guys you have. Now, wherever that guy plays, whether it's at left guard and you move Schwartz to right guard, whether it's at right tackle and you move Justin Pugh inside, I really think that that's got to be your guy. Now, the bigger question is that guy going to be someone that you will project to play left tackle down the road? You know, that's why a guy like Eric Flowers, I think, has been getting a lot of attention, is because not only do you see him as a guy who can contribute this year, but he's a guy that, you know what, if things don't work out with Will Beatty, if Will Beatty has another injury that's kind of held him back, you know, I believe in Beatty, and I may be in the minority, but I don't think left tackle is your problem this year. Right. I think your left tackle may be a problem next year if things fall apart. So if I'm at nine, I'm looking at a Sheriff and a Flowers, and those are really the only two offensive linemen that I think I would take in that spot.
Well, now remember, Beatty is actually signed for a couple of more years, Art, and if he holds up health-wise like he did this past season, I agree with you. I don't think that's an immediate concern, and moving forward, I don't think there's any reason to think that he won't be able to make it till the end of his contract in 17. So I'm with you on that, and for that reason, I'm not necessarily thinking that the guy I picked today has to be my left tackle of tomorrow. I'm not thinking that. I see that some people do because they don't like Will Beatty, or they think that his injury issues are going to crop up again. But I'm more in your camp on that one.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think if you're looking at a long-term projection, because I think there's still that idea that you don't take an interior lineman in the top 10 of the draft because now you're locked into that slot. And, you know, now you're paying a guard if a guard doesn't pay off, because a lot of people see Sheriff as a guard and not a tackle. I mean, all these projections don't really matter in the grand scheme of things, because right now if you're assessing the 2015 Giants, they need a starting offensive lineman. I don't believe that they will want to take the gamble that their starting right guard is John Jerry. John Jerry can fill in for a game or two, but I would not go into the season believing that he's going to be their starting that fifth piece, because I believe they have four pieces. I believe they committed to Justin Pugh, and I think Justin Pugh, if healthy this year, will have a big bounce back year, whether that's at right tackle, which is where I believe he should be, or inside. I think Beatty is fine. I think Richburg will be an upgrade at center, and I believe Jeff Schwartz will stay healthier than he was last year, and he will be an upgrade at whatever guard spot they play. So that's where I'm looking at it. And if one of those receivers is sitting there at nine, and I'm more confident in Amari Cooper than I am Kevin White, just because I think White is a little bit more of a physical projection than what Cooper has done production-wise. But if Amari Cooper is sitting there at nine, as unlikely as it may seem, I just don't see how the Giants can pass on him. I really don't.
Talking with Art Stapleton, who covers the Giants for the Record, sticking with the wide receiver topic, and we've fielded a lot of Giants calls from fans, Art, talking about how if Amari Cooper is there at nine, you're right, the Giants would have to pull the trigger on him. However, the critics would say, well, wait a minute, Art, you look at the Giants roster right now, there's a lot of depth at wide receiver. And what they did through previous drafts, Odell Beckham, some of the free agents they brought in, aren't you now just piling up in an area where you're barely going to get that guy on the field?
Well, I mean, I think if anything I learned from the Ben McAdoo offense that was installed last year, and I know it's not Ben McAdoo's offense, but, you know, if we go down that road, I mean, it's the McAdoo system that they've created here. I believe there are opportunities for wide receivers in this system, and it would not surprise me to see the Giants going forward and keeping, you know, six wide receivers on the 90-man roster rather than a five that you would have done with Kevin Gilbride in the past. And you can't tell me that if you're looking at a wide receiver core of Odell Beckham, Amari Cooper, Victor Cruz, and Ruben Randall, I mean, no disrespect to Sue Harris or you know, Dwayne Harris, who you want to have as a specialist, that kind of thing, you know, and any other receiver that I'm forgetting off the top of my head, you know, if you can create that kind of thing, I mean, look at what Green Bay has had the last couple of years. You know, you're talking about a, you know, a Jordy Nelson, a Randall Cobb, you know, and then they still brought in, you know, guys behind them. I don't think, you know, look, I don't think Cooper, if I were drafting, Cooper and White would not be there at nine, but trying to project what may happen tonight, if one of those guys is there, I truly believe that, you know, that would mean that Sheriff at the very least would not be there. You know, so if Sheriff goes before one of those receivers and one of those receivers at nine, now you're asking me, well, do you take one of those receivers or do you take Flowers? People are trying to bring Andrews Pete into the mix. I don't buy the Pete stuff. I don't think he fits the mentality that the Giants are looking for an offensive lineman this year. I think they need a tough guy. I think they need a nasty guy to add into this group. For everything I've read of Pete, I could be wrong, but it doesn't seem like he fits that spot. So a long-winded answer, as I always seem to give when we talk about this stuff, is I just think if the wide receiver is sitting there, then things have broken to the point where Jerry Reese and the crew in the Giants draft room will have to pick that talent, and that talent will override a need in that spot.
All right, let me run this one by you, Art, because here we are talking about needs and values. What about the third question that's going to arise when the Giants pick at nine? That is, do you move down? And I know a lot's going to depend on who's left on the board. In my opinion, and Jerry Reese has never moved down before as a GM since he took over for Ernie Accorsi, I don't think he does. I think that Jerry's going to have enough conviction about whoever is left that he's going to make the pick. I just don't see him sliding down. But there is a lot of fans that we get calling the show who say, yeah, go ahead, move down, get some extra picks because this team is not close enough that one player is going to make the difference between a Super Bowl and a non-Super Bowl. Do you move down?
You know, it depends on the price. What am I getting back? If I'm getting a two, if I'm getting a second-round pick this year to move down, you know, four or five spots, and I still think that I can get a guy, I can get an offensive lineman that maybe I can get an Eric Flowers that drops a little bit, you know, I'll take that chance. But I agree with you. This is about 2015 for the Giants in terms of impact. They need a player to come in and be a starter for this team.
Yeah.
You know, if they were looking for a projection down the road, you know, you might want to talk about it, you know, in a second round, maybe you take a TJ Clemmings, you know, teenage kid, local North Jersey kid, Paul, you know, both know him for a while. You know, the idea, you know, maybe you take a projection that, you know, in a year in your system working behind and, you know, maybe by the end of the season he could be your jumbo tight end, you know, and then you look at it and say, well, next year maybe he's challenging for a tackle. Then at that point you've made your decision on Pugh. You know, the reality is Giants aren't taking TJ Clemmings. They're not taking him at nine, certainly, and they're not looking at an offensive lineman that they can come in and work with. They don't need a project. They need a guy who can play. So if they make a decision that, you know what, we think Ali Marpet can play, we think Kyler Sambreo can play, well, you know what, then they're going to take those guys and they're going to play them. But they're not taking a project on the offensive line. They've seen more than enough of those. So I would not move down. And I do think it's funny how the people who want the Giants to accumulate picks are the ones that are often criticizing the Giants for not being able to find those talents in the later rounds. So if the Giants, if anything, Jerry Reese has hit on his first rounders. So the criticism the idea that if you move back and you accumulate picks, well, you don't like guys that they're picking in the second and third and fourth rounds anyway, so why do you want them to accumulate picks at
Art.
This point? You know, Jerry Reese has got to make picks for this season and this team. You know, I think John Mara made that very clear at the end of the 2014 season.
Yeah, and if there's one thing that we have learned by doing this show on a daily basis, it's that you can never make all the fans happy all the time.
No, it's not going to happen. I mean, you know, there are still fans who still would love to see Zach Martin in a Giants uniform rather than Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, I'm sure that group has decreased significantly the attendance, but I think as far as people wanting that, but there are still people who believe that, and you know what, you can make the argument that going into this season, if the Giants didn't have Odell Beckham Jr., who knows if they would even have Tom Coughlin or Jerry Reese or anyone else in the building, but you know what, hey, they still would have an all-pro right guard that they'd be able to play with, and now, you know, you'd be looking for a wide receiver in that spot.
I was just going to say, they'd be taking White or Cooper for sure.
Exactly. You know, and they'd probably be picking a heck of a lot lower because at 9, you know, some of those games that Odell Beckham Jr. pretty much put his team on his back and won, you know,
yeah.
a couple fewer wins, and maybe the Giants are closer to that Cooper White sweepstakes and are not talking about somebody dropping.
Well, Art, it's funny you brought up last year's draft because speaking of projections, I was reading, you recently did this online. You went back and you looked at all the scouting reports for the 2014 Giants draft class and you went by each player, what they were saying at the time. And, you know, clearly it's an inexact science, as you know, from covering the draft each and every year. I'm curious, what did you learn now that all of these players have 1 year under their belt about how maybe close or off some of those projections were in how these players played out their first year with the Giants?
Well, the funny thing is that, you know, the Giants hit on two guys in the fifth round that you know, between Berhe and Kennard, last year at the draft, they were afterthoughts, and now they're starters, you know, and that's a year. And what we've seen from Berhe, you know, it hasn't even really been in game action. It's just been still you're projecting as to what he can do. You know, obviously he had some time, I think it was the Atlanta game, you know, and then he really didn't do much after that because they stuck with the veterans in the secondary. But you look at Devon Kennard, I mean, a year ago when they drafted him, it was like, okay, well, you know, he's a guy who played out of position in college and you don't really know much. But now you're talking about it, I mean, other than JPP, there might not be, and maybe Big Hank inside, Jonathan Hankins, you know, I'd say Devon Kennard and the corners, obviously DRC and Prince, but Kennard is one of those guys that I think Giants fans are most excited about seeing this year. So that's one of the first things that I realized that, you know, I was going to say this to you guys. I am more intrigued by what the Giants do tomorrow night and really early on Saturday, not necessarily the fifth, sixth, seventh, but I'm more intrigued with the second and third round than I am with the first round. Because
I'm with you. Go ahead. I'm with you.
It's almost like I know what we're dealing with tonight. I know what I'm going to see tonight. You know, granted the reaction is going to be what it is, and you know, and it's great. You know, but it'll set them up for tomorrow night, and that's really where I want to see, you know, the scouting pay off. And if this team is truly finding guys like a Jonathan Hankins from 2 years ago, you know, guys who aren't going to get that kind of attention, but then all of a sudden they're roster builders and they're guys that you can build around. So I think that was the other thing, and the Beckham stuff was hilarious, Lance, with the you know, he doesn't have the top end speed, and he may have trouble catching in traffic, you know, and I'm not trying to downgrade any of the scouting opinions. There are a lot of people who put in a lot of time and effort into doing it and you know a heck of a lot more than I do or seen a heck of a lot more than I do of these prospects. But, you know, look, nobody could have expected Odell Beckham Jr. to do what he did with the Giants. And I think you'd probably say that about a lot of people who were watching this team in September, that Odell Beckham Jr. wouldn't have, quote-unquote, saved the season and saved this administration at the Giants because of two back-to-back losing seasons. But here's this guy who, you know, has kind of blown up the draft, and now everyone wants to find a Beckham. That's crazy.
Two things you just said in the last 45 seconds I want to mention. Well, first of all the scouting reports that you referred to, the Giants obviously had a much better report on him because they thought he was a top-five player coming in. So they must have thought that he had terrific hands, and they must have thought that he had good enough speed, and clearly they were proved right. So if that wants to show anything about the Giants scouting staff, it probably should give you confidence that they really did think he was a top five player, and he turned out to be one as the Offensive Rookie of the Year. The second thing I want to mention, and it builds right off of what you just said about tomorrow and Saturday. You know, most fans don't want to hear that. I'm with you 1,000%. I am much more intrigued by what happens in those rounds, because if you look at the Giants draft last year, they had four guys who gave them some significant contributions: Richburg and Beckham and Kennard and Andre Williams. Four guys. And that's a good draft. If you can get four rookies to give you significant contributions in their first years. Burhey, to some degree, special teams, didn't see much else. So if you want to go 4.5, I'll give you 4.5. And that doesn't even count the fact that Kerry Wynn, who came in as an undrafted free agent, looks like, you know, he's definitely going to be part of this team's future too. So I do think they did real well last year. And I'm with you, Art, in that I believe out of the 8 picks the Giants had this year, remember 2 in the 7th because of the trade of McManus to the Broncos, I think they've got to get at least contributions, significant contributions from 4 of the 8 players that they get out of this draft in the next 3 days. And if you want to say, well, include the undrafted rookie free agents too, I still think at least 4 guys got to give them something this year if they're going to take the jump that makes them a playoff team. Would you agree with that?
I would. And I think you look at, and it brings up a position that no one really speaks about this year. And going into last season, there was the idea that the Giants were loaded at corner. And this year, I mean, beyond Prince Amukamara, DRC, and Tremaine McBride, you know, you have to look at corner for the Giants. You know, now all of a sudden, Giants fans are so worried about safety that they want to convert whatever depth they have at cornerback to safety. So now you're talking Shockey Brown, Bennett Jackson, guys that normally maybe would fill in at corner, you'd move them around. You know, I know there's been the idea of, you know, Trey Waynes from Michigan State, the idea of would they take him at 9? Well, you know what? If the Giants are looking beyond this season, not only for an impact player, but somebody who can move, you've got to address corner at some point in this draft. You know, you need an impact. I could see a rookie coming in and having an impact at corner with this team, you know, based on injuries in the past and the way things have happened. But the two spots that I look at are corner. I mean, everyone's going to talk safety. We're going to talk offensive line. If you're talking about the two spots that a rookie can come in and truly impact, a mid-round rookie, I think it's pass rush, and I think it's cornerback. And I think those are the two spots that I think if the Giants are shrewd enough, I believe that they can get a guy in the mid-rounds that could come in, and we're talking this time next year and saying, man, remember when they hit this guy in the third round last year? What a steal for them going forward. And I think that's kind of, you know, it's kind of what they were hoping for Demontre Moore a couple years ago, and still Demontre is kind of on that cusp of is he going to be that breakout guy, or is he going to just be a guy who just never lives up to the full potential? But I agree with you, Paul. Out of 8 picks, if they can hit on 4, I think they have to hit on 3, but if they can hit on 4, I think they're moving in the right direction.
Talking with Art Stapleton, who covers the Giants for the Record. And Art, what you just alluded to really is backed up by documentation, because the Giants have the track record of not necessarily always looking at this draft as something that we need to address for 2015 per se, but making sure that we have our roster intact for 16 and 17. Case in point, Art, you look at the defensive tackle spot, Barry Colfield before he leaves. Okay, you have Linville Joseph ready. Linville Joseph's about to leave. You have Jonathan Hankins ready. So, I mean, I could certainly see the Giants going in the direction of maybe on paper right now it looks like they're set at that position, but when you evaluate the free agency group come next season, things can all of a sudden change drastically.
I'm going to go a step further, Art. The bottom line is you mentioned Prince, DRC, and McBride. Guess what? All 3 guys were hurt last year.
Yep.
I mean, seriously.
Well, that's why, but I think that's why the idea of, I mean, a year ago it was the Giants need tight ends, the Giants need tight ends. What's wrong with the Giants' tight ends? The Giants are loaded at corner. The Giants are loaded at corner where they don't need any cornerbacks. Why don't they think about trading some? Now, all of a sudden, a year later, and no one brings up tight ends.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like magically the Larry Donnell and Daniel Fells experiment has silenced the critics there, and it's, well, the Giants are you know, they need this and this. I mean, look, you know, I won't speak for you guys, but I expect Prince Amukamara to be with the Giants. I would think at some point he gets an extension and he continues on. They love Prince, what he represents. He's been on a trajectory that's an
right.
ascending player. You know, but there are no guarantees. I mean, if Prince Amukamara hits the open market next year and he can get $9 or $10 million a year with Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie on the team, you know, the Giants may have to make a decision. Is it DRC or is it Prince? So, you know, those kind of spots, those kind of decisions need to be made. Now, don't get me wrong. At nine, you need an impact player. You don't take someone based on where your team may be in 2016 or 2017. But in the later rounds, in the middle rounds, is that a tiebreaker? Do you look at a situation where you say, well, he could fit in this year, but next year we know this guy is leaving. We need to bolster that position. I think that's absolutely a consideration that the Giants have. And probably the good teams in the NFL, they all have that in their personnel department and in their draft room.
Art, as we let you go, I would only say this. Trey Waynes out of Michigan State, in my mind, is a top 10 value player in this draft. And if they take him, I guarantee you he's going to be on the field a lot in the sub-package. And as you said earlier, a corner can make an immediate impact on a team as a rookie. Even though he's, quote, not a starter because of all those sub-packages, he would see a lot of snaps. So I would not see Trey Waynes as an admission that we're looking more towards the future with that guy. I think he's a play-it-now kind of guy.
True. Well, hey, 2011, you know, you had – You had Terrell Thomas, you had Corey Webster, you had Aaron Ross, and the Giants ended up taking some guy named Prince Amukamara,
yeah,
based on value. Now,
sure,
granted, it was in the teens, and it wasn't at nine, but the idea was we're going to find a way for these guys to perform, and Terrell Thomas gets hurt. Obviously, Prince gets hurt. But then those guys at the end of the year, and we all know what happened in Indianapolis later that February. So
I saw the
it's
game.
Certainly a possibility.
Art, thank you.
Art, real quickly, before we let you go, I'm curious who you think the Giants are going to take at number nine, if we could put you on the spot here.
You know what? I think it's between Brandon Scherff and Eric Flowers. If one of those two guys are there, I think they're in the Giants' top 10, and they would be in their first row, which is what Jerry Reese always refers
right.
to. I'll go Scherff, and if he goes early, I think all bets are off at this point. But I would say either one of those two offensive linemen will be a Giant at some point tonight, probably around 9:30, quarter to 10.
Sounds good. Art Stapleton, who covers the Giants for the Record. Art, really appreciate the time and the insights. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Art.
Okay, guys.
All right, that is Art Stapleton weighing in on a variety of different topics related to the Giants, and thought he brought up some real good points in terms of when you look at the rosters and you look at the depth chart, how things can really change overnight.
You know, it's really funny, and the perception of what a team needs, even from the end of the season to the beginning of the draft,
yeah,
often changes. And, I mean, we're not even talking about in-season. I'm talking off-season when there haven't been any games played. I mean, really, in that regard, nothing has changed in terms of the talent that you left on the field. What has changed are the guys who are hurt, you hope are getting healthy, and are going to be able to give you what you expected. And, of course, you've got the shuffling of the roster, of the tweaks that you're going to be making in terms of free agency, and now with the draft. But, you know, I'm just going to give you one name, one player.
Uh-oh.
And everybody knows that I love his skill set, but it hasn't worked out because he's lost his confidence, at least in my opinion, and he's been often injured. And that's Jaron Hosley. Because we're talking about the Giants' cornerback position right now with the three primary guys all coming off of injury, and the Giants need some depth at corner. We're talking about converting corners to safeties and everything else. Jaron Hosley just got a new lease on life. He's got a new defensive coordinator in here with a fresh start, okay? He's got
a new positional coach, too.
A positional coach who's going to let him play man-to-man, which is what he's most comfortable in doing. And hopefully, for his sake, he's got his mind right, and he's got all of his injuries taken care of, and he can go back to square one and say, okay, look, let me use my experiences in the league to this point, albeit not the greatest of experiences, and try to move forward. Because there is a roster spot on this team to be won by a J-Ron Hosley if he produces. It's there for him, but he's got to earn it.
Well, and think about all the injuries, Paul, in terms of the slot corner last year. So even if you don't win the starting position, how integral it is to make sure that you have somebody ready to step in at a pinch, too.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a real big part of this equation. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. I know we had a number of people on the line while we spoke to Art. Do appreciate your patience. We're going to reopen up the phone lines here as we move into hour number two. Remember, there's a two-hour program. We're extending things here during the course of draft week. So let's head back to the phone lines. We check in with Dre in Atlanta. Dre, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, Lance? What's going on, Pete? How's everything going?
Hello, Dre. How's everything with you?
Hey, Lance, hanging in there, working hard.
That's good to hear. You know, that's a part of life. So what do you have for us?
I keep it crime free.
Absolutely.
But, you know, after looking at, you know, a lot of the debate shows, a lot of draft shows, I can see where Pete is coming from. We need that stable foundation on that line. And I could see in the first round we picking up offensive linemen. I would rather see Sheriff, but I need that Mauler on that line, because if you look back in the 80s and even some of the 90s, you know, back when you had Bart Oates, you know, Jumbo Elliott, we always had that Mauler on the line. And when the running game is going, everything's slow. And I think the ideal is to keep Eli upright, and the best way to do that is by handing it off. We have some stallions in the backfield. You know, we have a thoroughbred now in Vereen who could come out there and catch passes. So if we get a show, if we show up that offensive line, get somebody that's going to be that difference maker, that one piece, you know, I think that solidifies everything on offense. And I think the second round, we either going to hit a corner or a safety. I would like to see Eric Rowe. I think he'll still be there. If not, you know, we can address other areas. But I think, you know, somewhere in the fifth and sixth round, we got to get Ali Marpet. He reminds me of Richie Seiberg, and I think he'll be an asset coming down the line. But just want to hear your opinions on that. But I'm looking forward to tonight. I got everything set up ready.
All right, Dre.
Cool.
Thanks so much for weighing in. Appreciate the phone call.
The one thing that I would say about Marpet is that, you know, coming out of Hobart, you're talking about quite a big jump. I mean, from D3 to come all the way up to the NFL. He is a guy who played tackle at the D3 level. D-Lay will have to get a technical issue there to clear it out. He's got to make a move now, you know, to come up to the NFL. I'm not sure that he's a plug-and-play tackle. In fact, I would say that's probably a heck of a reach. A lot of people say to me, he's going to be a developmental guy. He's going to take a year or so. Again, get the dent wizard to pull out the dents. That's not where I'm looking. If you tell me that maybe the Giants get Marpet in round three or four as like an additional guy. Let's say they get Sheriff in round one. And then let's say they get Eric Rowe in round two. And then you say to me, well, they got Marpet in round three. You know what? I don't have a problem with the Giants taking two offensive linemen in the first half of this draft. I really don't. Because it's all about not only fixing that O-line starting unit, it's also about improving the depth. And so Marpet, I think a lot of people are thinking in the NFL, he may be better suited to guard. There's a chance he could even play center. But I don't necessarily know that he's going to be a tackle in this league, and he's certainly not going to be one as a plug-and-play guy.
But he does fit into the criteria, as you just touched on, where there's versatility.
So that
you can at least it appears you can plug him into a variety of different positions.
Good athlete.
And the reason I throw that out, Paul, is the Giants, based on track record,
like to have
offensive linemen who are very versatile. We're also checking in on Twitter. I know a number of you who can't get to the phones listening to the program do a great job throwing out some comments and questions, so I want to address those before we head back to the phone line. Certainly want to make this as interactive as possible. A number of people weighing in on Brandon Sheriff as a big dash 07088, who is at ColeWiss88. The X factor about Sheriff is his nastiness, and we need some nastiness on the line. He throws that out. Shane at ShaneCFC24 says, pick Sheriff at 9 unless Cooper or White are available, in my opinion. And that goes back to what Art had mentioned. If those two fall, you can't fault the Giants if they are to go in the direction of perhaps adding another wide receiver into the mix, although a number of callers have weighed in and argued, well, wait a minute, we seem to have a lot of depth in that department. Continuing to check in, some more tweets here. At Mr. Ruiz 81 says, I want to see the combination of Jonathan Hankins and Danny Shelton up the middle. Shelton, the defensive tackle out of Washington, who have not seen a lot of hype surrounding him leading up to at least these mock drafts. Not that that's necessarily anything bad. We've talked about him in great detail, but he's been quiet in terms of the storylines connected to him, Paul.
Well, he's a guy who I think my tea leaves are telling me the Bears are interested in at number 7. In fact, if you're worried about Sheriff dropping to the Giants, people around the league, not here at the facility, but I've had people around the league tell me they think that Shelton, Waynes, and Sheriff would all be very high considerations for the Bears at number 7. Now, we know John Fox is a defensive guy. I'd like to believe he would go defense, and certainly if Shelton is there, I think that'd be a great pick for them. The people who think that Williams is going to drop, and apparently some people are starting to think now maybe he's not going to be a top 3 pick, which I find incredible. But if he falls, I don't see any way John Fox passes on him.
Well, I would agree. Plus, the Bears certainly are going to want to grab some guys that they can bring into up the pass rush. And what Paul just alluded to, there was a report out on ProFootballTalk.com related to the picks that go before the Giants at Jacksonville, which has the 3rd overall selection. You assume both quarterbacks are going to be off the board.
Yeah.
A lot of people are anticipating, okay, Leonard Williams, who is arguably one of the best defenders in the mix, he would go to Jacksonville. Gus Bradley, the head coach, is a defensive-minded guy. He was the former defensive coordinator with Seattle. The report from ProFootballTalk.com says the Jaguars are deciding between Dante Fowler Jr. and Amari Cooper, and that Leonard Williams is not necessarily in the mix. Once again, many rumors that are out there right now, so that's why Paul just threw out, well, maybe Williams could even fall, and then you're going to start to get to teams that I don't know if they necessarily need a defensive end. They may need a linebacker, they may need a wide receiver, so all of a sudden, who knows? You're at 7 or 8. Leonard Williams is still there. I would agree with you. You're not going to let him continue to fall.
No. And quite honestly, if he suddenly starts dropping into that 5, 6, 7 range, there'll be other teams trying to jump up to get him.
Absolutely, which will create even more movement
yes,
and more drama.
Yes.
Let's head back to the phone line. Speaking of drama and movement, we check in with Chris in New Jersey. Chris, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Hey, guys. How you doing? You guys do a great job. You're really, really
appreciate
doing.
That,
I enjoy
Chris.
It every single day.
Thank you so much. So what do you have for us?
Oh, okay, I don't think Sheriff is going to come to us. I don't think he's going to be there. And I just have a couple of things, Paul, I want to throw out. With all these injury players that have been happening over the last few days, dropping like Ray and Collins and Gregory and a lot of other players are moving up, right?
Yeah.
So what's your thought on... I like Alvin Bud Dupree. I really, really do. I think he's a monster. I know you can never have enough of pass rushers. I think he can develop into a down pass rusher. I like the guy. Maybe he's a 9. I don't know if we can get him a 12 if we move down, but I really like the guy. And I like Trey Waynes. I do. I think he'll be a good fit. But I agree with you guys. I think the Giants' philosophy is offensive line. I would prefer a natural tackle myself. I like Flowers over Sherry, my personal self. Just your idea. Give me, Paul, and another thing I need to ask you, with all these injuries, the business aspect of the game
yeah.
in the administration office, with all these injuries, with insurances, could you just talk about that, about the liability that's involved with these injured players? And really talk about Bud Dupree for me, okay? Paul, thanks.
Sure, no problem.
All right, Chris, thanks for the call.
As far as Dupree, what I wrote down when I did my workup on him, I had him down. I said I really like him as an athlete. Obviously, we know that. I mean, the guy is incredible
He's
in terms
a freak.
Of – he really is. He really is. And really plays best in space. To me, I think he's going to be better off as potentially a 3-4 outside linebacker. Okay, a strong side, I would think, okay. But the Giants system, I really would have a hard time trying to place him because I don't like him as a 4-3 outside linebacker, because I'm not so sure that given the way that style of defense works that he's going to fit that as well. I'm also not so sure that he's going to be able to play defensive end in a 4-3, and the reason is because I wrote down he's going to need more power and he's going to need to improve on how he sheds blocks. And if you're a 4-3 defensive end and you're playing at 6'4", 269, okay, you better play with the kind of power and the amount of moves and shedding ability that a man of that size and that frame has. He doesn't really show that for me. And so that would be the negative in the Giants taking him. I don't disagree with you. I think he's a freak of an athlete. I think he's a top 15 pick. But I think he's going to be better suited for somebody else's scheme and system. I don't think the Giants really have a great place to put him right now.
Well, and speaking of that, Paul, you could say that about a lot of the pass rushers in this year's draft class. It comes down to the team scheme. It's not necessarily that there's no upside and there's no talent there with the player. It's the fact, if I take that player and I want to get the most out of that player, exactly, how am I going to use him? And I think Bud Dupree is that intriguing selection, but you got to say to yourself, how would he work in a 4-3 defense? And the same thing with a player who comes from a different background.
If he plays a rover in a 3-4, that's a better spot for him than somebody who lines up in a standard 4-3. Because in that 3-4, you've got that guy on the outside who sometimes he's standing up on the edge, sometimes he's got his hand in the dirt on the edge, sometimes he's dropping back, he's doing a zone blitz kind of thing. That would suit him a lot better than the way the Giants would use him. So that's why I don't think I would pick him.
Well, let me throw this out to you, Paul.
Terrific prospect, though. Tremendous talent.
With respect to Dupree and some of these other pass rushers who, you know, may not be the ideal fit in terms of scheme. What about Spags? His track record in terms of creativity, though, at least.
Well,
and how that may apply.
Again, his base is a 4-3, and he works off of man coverage on the outside and front four getting it done on their own. Doesn't necessarily like to give those guys a lot of help, wants his front four to do what they're supposed to do, and doesn't want to take a whole bunch of chances with those guys up front, with, you know, sending a bunch of backers. When he does, he's creative with his blitzes, but he's not going to blitz a ton. He wants his front four to get after it. He puts a lot on their shoulders. So anyway, that's my take on that. Your other question about the money and the stuff, well, the salary cap really causes a lot of havoc for you because when you're talking about a bunch of injured players on your roster, all that money goes against your cap. It's not like you can get rid of it. There's no way to wash it away. There's no discount on a guy's contract just because he's hurt. The only thing that you can wind up doing is potentially getting an injury settlement with a guy. But even that's going to cost you some money, and the injury settlement winds up going against your cap as well. So in terms of liability for all those injured players, yeah, that money burns you, which is one of the other reasons why it's very difficult to take a player very high in the first round if he's got an injury history. Your medical staff better be darn sure that that's not going to come back and burn you. You know, you're talking about Gurley, who's coming off an ACL in his past. You know what? You're taking a running back who's had an ACL in his history. Okay, I get it, but look at Lattimore with the 49ers. You know, I thought when they took him, geez, that's a great gamble in that. If he turns out to be healthy, they got themselves an all-pro caliber back. Well, guess what? It's 2 years now down the road.
Well, you don't even have to look at this year's draft. Sam Bradford, another guy that went extremely high and unfortunately has been plagued by injuries. So, you know, guys who have that track record and you use such a high pick, a high value pick.
A lot of risk.
Yeah, you want them to be on the field for 16 games. And when you don't get that, you have to find other ways to make up for that. That's why, you know, we were talking about last season with respect to the Giants, Paul, how much injuries impacted the makeup of the roster. Because
sure,
you lost players that weren't necessarily third and fourth on the depth chart.
Yeah.
You lost one and two guys.
And it costs you money on your cap. I mean, it's a horrible, it's almost like a triple whammy. You lose the player, you lose the roster spot on your depth chart, and you lose the money on your cap. It's like a triple whammy. So why would you risk taking a guy with an injury history that high in the draft? You know, that's the other factor for me that I kind of weigh when I'm looking at value.
Want to get to a few more tweets, and then we're going to hop back on the lines. I know a number of you are waiting, but I want to try to balance the load here. Giants Nation at Big Blue Beckham, who we hear from a lot. Ideally, it would be great to get Brandon Scherff in the first round, and then Demaryius Randle, who I threw out earlier, the safety out of Arizona State, in the second. David Anderson at Dave's T247. Second-round pick could be more interesting, important, because there should still be first-round talent available, and that will all depend on who goes in round one. But sometimes you always have somebody who you rank high that maybe another team doesn't rank high and could very well be there for you in the number two spot. Let's head back to the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. Keep sending in the tweets, though, at hashtag Giants Chat. Paul Dottino, Lance Meadow here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, the Thursday draft edition on Giants.com. Glad to have you aboard. So glad you could join us. We check in with Mike in Oakland. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How's it going this morning?
Doing well, Mike. How about yourself?
I'm doing great, man. TikTok is finally here, so I'm ready for tonight. It was real interesting to me. You know, I've called in a couple times, and I've pointed out that, to me, you know, the lack of a running offense and the lack of a running defense means we really need to focus on offensive and defensive line. But, you know, the last caller talking about Bud Dupree was pretty interesting, because I was doing a bunch of reading on the guy, and they pointed out that, yeah, his production in college wasn't that great, but the physicality that he has is pretty much the only real, you know, real defensive end among the tweeners that they've got ranked highly in the draft. And that he's, you know, basically young and really coachable. So, you know, a lot of options, but I think about, you know, Dupree opposite JPP, that would be pretty much dynamite. So that's not a bad option.
Well, let me ask you this. Body size-wise, you know, athleticism-wise, he's a lot like DeMontre Moore. You know, DeMontre's just about the same kind of body type. And if you got DeMontre here, you still think there's upside on him and you're still working with him, you know, do you want a second one of those? I mean, that's something you want to consider too.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. Actually, I went back and kind of looked back at DeMontre's draft profile, and because I just haven't seen – I mean, I guess we've seen flashes of him, but he just still plays like, you know, so pretty much an inexperienced player to me. You know, he loses his assignment. He loses the edge all the time. So
he is now.
I understand he's got upside, but I haven't seen it. And to be honest, I've been way more impressed with Kerry Wynn.
Yeah, Kerry Wynn. Yeah. Kerry Wynn looks like a player based on what we saw in December. But I will tell you this about DeMontre Moore. He's now a show-me player for me. It's time to show me what I saw on tape when he was in college, because the man was a beast when he came out of the draft.
You look at last season,
that,
Mike.
That's what I saw when I went back in there and looked at his draft profile. So I hope this year is his year, but I've lost a lot of faith in him. And so while I still got you on the line, let me just ask you this question, because, you know, I looked at a bunch of film, and I really liked what I saw from Scherff, because the guy finishes every block. I don't care where he is, down the field, you know, on the line. Like, the dude never quits, and I love that about him. But a lot of the news outlets are talking about Andres Pete a lot for the Giants. And the thing about him is I can't get a handle on what the experts think about him, because some guys have him ranked top 10. Other guys have him basically end of first round talent. Some talk about second round. So, you know, I know you guys are on top of it, so I'd really like to hear, what do you think about Pete, really, and why is there such a wide difference on what people think about him? And then if you got time, too, we talked about Shaq Thompson. Has he ever played in space? He wants to be an outside linebacker, but is he realistically a good strong safety candidate?
I think I'd probably try him first at strong safety, but he's been a rover. He's been a monster. He's been everywhere for them, and that's what makes it so difficult, because he's such an incredible athlete, and no one has actually honed in and focused him, because in college they're just saying, we want to win games. They're not interested necessarily in projecting where he's going to be in the NFL, and they're not coaching him up at one spot and saying, look, focus all your energy on being this, because you're going to be great at this in your pro career. That's not what they're doing in college.
Well, and to answer your question, Mike, we had Damon Heward on, who is the Washington Huskies radio analyst, a few weeks ago, and we pressed him on Shaq Thompson, you know, give us an indication. Where would he translate to the NFL level? Or said, well, where did they utilize him? His answer was, Lance, they utilized him pretty much everywhere.
Right.
They didn't necessarily look to contain him in any specific position. So, I mean, I hope that that answers your question. I don't think it's so simple to say, voila, he's a safety in the NFL level. Voila, he's a linebacker on the NFL level. Right. Plus, let's not forget, he also did a little bit of running.
Yes.
He did special teams.
Yes.
I mean, they utilized him to every degree.
He's an arena ball player.
There you go.
Do they say the kid's coachable? What's his personal profile?
Damon Heward, from what I recall off the top of my head, and if you want to look in the archives, we probably have that full interview up, depending on what day. I don't know offhand. I could look it up and send out a tweet. But he said he's a great locker room guy, a real good kid, very open to learning, very positive remarks about him.
And as far as Pete is concerned, the problem where you come into with him and why there's such a variance in terms of his opinions on him, terrific athlete, he's a technician at tackle, not a mauler or a brawler, okay? So what's your preference? Do you like Muhammad Ali or do you like Joe Frazier? You know, that's what it comes down to. If you like the brawling kind of offensive lineman, then Pete's probably not your guy. If you're better with the guy with the big frame and the technique, then he's probably your guy. So that's a beauty in the eye of the beholder thing. The other thing you want to keep in mind about him is that the guys like Collins and Sheriff look as though they're going to be guys who can play either guard or tackle. They look like they've got enough of physical skills and tools and athleticism to be able to play both positions at the NFL level. It looks like Pete, with the frame that he has, the physical tools that he has, he's going to be a hit tackle or he's not going to be anything. I don't think I've talked to anybody who thinks he could possibly play guard because of the way his frame is built and his skill set in the NFL. So that automatically makes him a bigger risk, because he can only play one position as opposed to two.
Well, that's what happens when you're 6'7" and over 300 pounds. It's
very
difficult to shove you in the interior.
The people who really like him, okay, who really like him say because of his size, his frame, and his technique, he could be a terrific left tackle and a pass protector long term. He'll be a left tackle for 10 years in this league. Or we'll beef him up a little bit and see if we can put him at right tackle and he'll be there for 10 years in this league. So that's fine. And that's why he's still considered a high pro-ready player. But if your preference is the mauler, okay, and the guy who looks like he can play multiple positions on the line, then you're not going to have him ahead of a Sheriff. You're going to put Sheriff up top. And that's really the kind of way you look at it in terms of beauty in the eye of the beholder. The other thing I will say, too, Sheriff, by everybody's account, and I'm talking everybody that I've heard, they all believe he's the most polished in terms of his technique is also very, very good. And he finishes plays, as you said. I mean, there's really nothing not to like about him. The critics will tell you maybe against speed rushes off the edge, he was a little bit slow in his footwork. Well, the guy had arthroscopic surgery in September, missed one practice, didn't miss a game.
Still came back, yeah.
I'm going to say that had something to do with it, okay?
And appreciate the phone call, Mike. Thanks so much for weighing in here as we are on Big Blue Kickoff Live, the Thursday edition, breaking down the ins and outs of the draft less than 24 hours away, in which the Giants will make their 9th overall selection. Let's head back to the phone lines here, and we check in with Conrad in Florida. Conrad, what's happening?
Hey, nice speaking to you guys. First-time caller.
Hi.
But
glad
I've been listening for a long time.
Thanks so much. So
I wanted to know the mysterious Canadian lineman, how does he fit into the picture? He was like the most valuable player in the Canadian League, and I was wondering about that. The other thing, if we took Cooper at 9 because it fell to us, there's nothing preventing us from using that as trade bait to get an offensive lineman who might have good experience. What do you think?
Well, anything's possible, but once you take a draft pick and you then wait a few weeks, and appreciate the phone call, Conrad. Thanks so much for weighing in. You know, I think the market diminishes a little. I would think, if anything, if you're going to make a trade like that, you do it on draft.
Right
away.
Right
away.
You
wouldn't then wait 3 weeks and say, oh, give us a right guard or give us a right tackle.
No, no. You do it right away. This is where the action's going to be happening. It'll be today, tomorrow, Saturday. You're not going to be doing anything down the road in that regard. And about Brett Jones, the CFL center, my understanding was at the very least he'll back up Richburg at center, and he's going to be given an opportunity to compete at one of the guard spots. And let's see what happens. I mean, nobody here knows for sure what he's going to do until he gets on the field.
He has an impressive resume based on what he did in the CFL. There's versatility there in terms of the center and the guard spot. But at the same time, there's that transitional phase, Paul, because where offensive linemen line up in the CFL, a little bit different than the NFL. He's going to be one of those players. I wouldn't necessarily put him in the show me category because he hasn't been here, but an intriguing guy to watch compete during the course of training camp.
Look, they brought him down here because they think he can improve on the 53. At what spot on the 53, at what position on the depth chart, and how deep on the depth chart, nobody really knows the answer to that, but they think he can improve it, and that's why he's here.
Moving along here on the phone lines, we're going to try to get to as many of you as possible as we take you till 2 p.m. Eastern. Victor is in Texas. Vic, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen? I appreciate you taking my call.
I have a
scenario, but also I just wanted to chime in real quick on Asandre's feet. One of the red flags was that the guy actually didn't want to bench press at the combine or his pro day. So think about an offensive lineman, guys, who doesn't want to do the bench press at his pro day or at the combine.
I only say this to you. I try not to put much stock in those things. I like to believe what I see. You watch the games, you watch the tape, you watch the competition, you watch the game action. You really want to put 98% of your grade on that. And the combine and the pro day, that's very, very minuscule.
Who's the strongest offensive lineman in the NFL ever?
Right?
Dallas Cowboy.
He's a Cowboy?
He was a Dallas Cowboy. Had a bench press. Strongest guy still able to bench press.
Larry Allen, are we talking about?
Yes, there you go. And he was a mauler, right? That's what these guys do. That's what the red flag was about him. That's why in some people's eyes he kept dropping, because the guy just didn't seem like he had strength. He has the technique, like you said. Technique is very good to have, but you got to be able to move guys.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why he doesn't present as a left tackle. He presents as a right tackle, like you said. I totally agree with that. But anyway, on to my scenario with the Giants, right? And now we gotta have a Cinderella in this game for us
Vic,
to do this.
Vic,
now,
I don't mean to cut you off. I'm gonna let you continue. I just want to get clarification because sometimes we hear things and we throw it out. The reason that I'm seeing as to why he did not attempt the bench press at the combine, he was dealing with a right elbow injury at that point. Now I don't know as to why they didn't follow up on pro day. For all we know, is the right elbow injury was still bothering him. But I just want to throw that out because at this time leading up to the draft, we always hear these things and sometimes things that are reported are not on point. But he did have an injury at that point. That's why he did not take part in the bench press.
And I didn't know that, but that's one of the reasons why I don't put much stock in that. I can't.
Yeah.
That's not tangible to me.
And I didn't mean to cut you off, Vic. Continue.
No. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. No. So this is my scenario. The Giants have the 9th pick overall. Two things need to happen here, right? Now, we have to have a team that has two picks. That team that has two picks are the Browns. They have the 12th and 19th. Am I right? 12th and the 19th.
Correct.
Pick, right?
12th and 19th.
So,
yeah.
So one or two things have to happen. Now, either Mari Cooper or White needs to get past one of these teams, the Raiders, right, or the Jets. Now, if Mari Cooper, he gets past him, that leaves us with an opportunity to either grab the best player available or have the Cleveland Browns. And I want to amass picks this time, because I think the second round is the golden round for us. We could actually beef up our defensive line, and we can get the offensive lineman that we need as well. Not necessarily the best, and sure, but we can get a T.J. Clemens as well, you know? So just think about this. The Browns want to move up because, hey, we got Amari Cooper or we have White there.
Okay.
They give us their 12th. We take their 9th, and we take their second-round pick and possibly pick a player off their roster that we need. So now we have the 12th overall pick. We can still pick up a player that we need.
All right, hold on. You're swapping 9 for 12, 9 for 12,
yeah.
And you're,
uh-huh.
you're asking for their 2,
uh-huh.
Okay, which is at number 43.
And we pick 42nd, right?
We pick – Giants pick 40.
40. So okay. We get the 43rd, right?
All right, so you're taking their 43. That's the payment for moving down 3 spots.
Exactly.
Okay, go ahead.
So So think about that. And also, we can get an edge rusher. Now, I know the Maras, these, you know, we don't necessarily pick bad decision-making players, but we also have a Randy Gregory who could possibly slip, or Shane Ray, he might not get out. He might get out of the first round, he might not. But I'm looking at what Spags is looking at here. You still have Arik Armstead. You know, he reminds me of a Chris Canny type, big, long arm type guy, getting on that interior line. You start rebuilding that NASCAR package that made us formidable on a defense, you know, and start building from that point. Because we got to help Spags out. He just got back. We got to help him. But we can also help Eli Manning as well. I mean, that's just my scenario, because I want to amass picks this year. I want us to be able to get more players, because the second round is the golden round. So just give me your thoughts and keep me online, because I'm not listening to you guys on the radio.
All right, well, let me say this. I think what I would do in that situation, if I had conviction about the guy at 9, then I would just have to take him. As we've been saying many, many times before, that if you really strongly believe that one of your guys is there, you got to take him, and you can't slide down at all. Now,
even if people come up with and offer you
stuff. If let's say for argument's sake, player X, I'm not going to name names because then people are going to post it online and they're going to say that you know who the Giants are taking. I don't want
to
get trapped.
You're trying to get him in trouble. That's what you're trying to do.
I'm not going to get trapped. But let's say Jerry Reese really wants player X, and his second choice is player Y. And they're both gone by number 9, okay? If that's the situation, and you're telling me they can move down those 3 spots and get Cleveland's number 2, I'm telling you, I think there's good value in that trade. I'm okay with that. And then he's going to have to move down to 12, and then he's going to have to take who he gets in that cluster. I understand it. I think it's logical. I think it's a presentable and value situation that you've given us. At the same time, I'm telling you, if Jerry has conviction at 9, he's taking his guy. And he's not going to – he should field the calls. I've been saying all along, he should always field the calls. But I don't think he's going to make a deal if he really wants a guy at 9.
Well, definitely. Hey, appreciate it, guys. Thank you. And
thank you.
It's going to be an awesome draft night, man. I can't wait. It's been a long time coming, and I can't wait to see Giants football get started again. Appreciate it, guys.
You can't wait, Vic. This chair is barely in one piece anymore with the guy next to me. Appreciate the phone call, Vic. Thanks so much for chiming in on the conversation. You have to keep your options open about any trades, but at this point, and I'm going back to what Jerry Reese said at his press conference, when you pick in the top 10, Paul,
right,
you expect to get a playmaker.
Okay.
And that is their philosophy. So if you expect to get a game changer / playmaker, then obviously there's an attraction of sticking it out and staying at number 9.
That's the deal. You're taking a guy who you believe is going to be an impact player and an immediate starter, and that's why you're going to do that. The only reason to move down is if your first row of players, it's not working out, and you feel as though, okay, now how can we improve our value by moving down a couple of spots. And the 43rd pick as a trade-off isn't a bad move there if you're only going to slide 3.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We check in with, I believe it's Simlis in Rhode Island. Simlis, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on?
How we doing?
Hey, Lance. Good. Hey. So last year, a lot of fans wanted Ebron, and I really didn't like Ebron. He looked soft to me. I never really bought into him. Also, I never thought, you know, you could take a tight end that high unless it's someone really special. And I think the Giants did the right thing. Beckham came out of nowhere. I remember watching before the draft and thinking, wow, his mom looks really fit. He's got some good genes. And he really turned out to be amazing. This year, Chef seems like that guy. I'm not really on board with that. I mean, we have injuries all over the place, and we always wonder why. And then, like, we look at a guy like Chef who had a broken leg, a knee, and a hamstring at the combine, and I look at that and I think, okay, maybe it's the guys we're looking at and picking. So don't get me wrong, though. I like Chef, Paul.
Right.
I just don't want a lineman in round 1. I believe you can get a guard to come in day 1 to start in the second round and fill that hole and plug that hole. I think we do need a lineman, but I like it in the second round. In the first round, I want to maximize my salary cap, pick a position that has a high salary cost, lock them up for the next 5 years at a low salary. And here's the positions I look at. I look at, in the top 10, quarterback. We don't need a quarterback. I think Eli's going to be good. He's going to be great in this system, even better this year. Edge rusher, Always could use an edge rusher. I don't think you can ever have enough. A left tackle, I think we're set, and we got a lot of money locked into Beattie. Cornerback, I think you could always use another cornerback because there's so many receivers coming in this year and from last year and next year. And finally, wide receiver. Those are the positions I look at in the top 10, that those are foundational blocks. I heard you talking about it a few days ago, Paul, about the foundation building blocks of your team, and I buy into that. On average, those are the highest priced positions in the NFL,
right?
And you're looking at salary cap, trying to maximize your team. And, you know, to be honest with you, I look at it, there's like four or five guys that I think could be there at nine.
Okay.
And Chef could be there also, but, you know, I'm going to pass. But I look at Bud Dupree. The things that scare about him, though, is that his technique does not look like it's there. I've watched some film on him, and I'm not sure if it's because of poor coaching or he just can't learn it, and I don't know which one it is. Kevin White, he's a one-year wonder, and that scares me. You never know what year two would have looked like, and that kind of scares me. Devontae Parker, he's not really a fast-twitch guy, really great hands, great receiver. I don't know if he's the best fit route runner for a McAdoo-type system. Danny Shelton, I love the guy, but you know, and he has a high motor, but I watched the Senior Bowl practice, and the guy got winded in practice, and I was like, okay, what's going on here? And I've heard from guests from you guys that he has some eating weight issues, which at 330, you can't really get much bigger than that. You know, that kind of scares me. So I was wondering with those guys, you know, if I'm the Giants, that's where I'm looking to fill that role and pick. What do you guys think?
Well, I'll let you go on the other fellas. I'm only going to address Kevin White, if that's okay, because I really haven't talked a whole lot about him. The thing that concerns me, if you want to be a naysayer about him, is that he has really moved up since the season ended. And I remember a personnel guy told me years ago that those are the most dangerous players to take in the draft because their season's complete. You've scouted them all year. You've seen them play their games all season and maybe throughout their entire career, and you had a feeling about them. And then all of a sudden, now during the offseason, in 3 or 4 months' time, because the guy had a great workout, because he had a great interview, because he had a great combine, you're going to overshadow all the stuff he put on tape and suddenly jack him up 15, 10, 12 spots, whatever the case may be, and say now he's a premier player. Kevin White, I don't know. I don't remember people telling me he was a top 5 or top 10 pick way back when in November. And they're telling me that now in the last 2 months. Everybody seems to be in agreement. He's a top 5 pick now. And so, okay, we're jumping on board. Everybody's saying that. I guess it's true. But I had a personnel guy say to me, you know what? Never change the grade off of a guy from the time the season ends based on his combine or pro day numbers unless you simply needed to confirm something that you suspected. And if you want to do that, you can just kind of inch him up a little bit on your board. But never, never give him a huge pop. Because that's a mistake. That's where you screw yourself up. By overinflating a guy on something that has happened since he played his last game on a football field. I only present that to you because that's a football 101 philosophy that I was taught from an old school guy. And it's not about Kevin White specifically. But boy, he fits that story, doesn't he?
Well, and Danny Shelton, who Simlis also brought up, and Simlis, appreciate the phone call. I'll address Danny Shelton in terms of, you know, some of the comments that you made. In terms of the weight situation, I don't know enough to necessarily comment on that. But, you know, here is a number of positives related to his game from what I've heard and from what I've read and from what I've seen. You have to take into consideration going up against Pac-12 teams, a lot of them run those spread offenses where you are forcing these nose tackles to run sideline to sideline. Not many defensive tackles are expected to do that. He has been tested in that department every single game, and from what Damon Eward told us, he stayed on the field. it wasn't as if, all right, we'll just put him out there for first down and we'll put him out there for second down. So there is some versatility connected to that player. Plus, look at his numbers in terms of the pass rush. His ability to get to the quarterback from a position that, even if you go to the NFL level, is not known consistently to rack up the sacks. That was impressive, too. I think there's a number of positives regarding Danny Shelton that some of these other little peripheral things can be worked out at the next level if there are any red flags or there are any concerns. But the reason I brought up Danny Shelton in relation to what you were talking about with Kevin White, Paul, Shelton to me was also the type of player that was an unknown commodity at this point last year. Then all of a sudden, over the course of the offseason, into training camp, heading into his last season, which turned out to be with Washington, he became a household name. So we've seen a number of prospects sometimes that they have this blow-up period, as I like to call it, and it's like, wow, guy came out of the woodworks. Is it hype? Is there substance behind that? And those are the things that teams are going to have to decipher.
Well, you know, the one thing that, troubles me about all of this stuff is that, you know, when you hear the remarks about a player positively or negatively, what you don't know is where's their frame of reference coming from. Now, remember what I told you about the offensive linemen, the technique guys, and then the brawler guys? Again, some man's apples is another man's oranges. There's a different frame of reference, a different perspective at what you're looking at, the style of player that you prefer.
Your scheme.
It's not that the guy's necessarily any less of a player, but he's maybe a different style of player, and there are some things about him that just kind of take him down in your book, but don't take him down in somebody else's book, because maybe it's not that they evaluate him at a different level of play, it's that there are certain characteristics about him that make him different for you. And so the hardest part for me is when I read all of the draft pundits and the draft Knicks is I don't know where their frame of reference is coming from. That's extremely dangerous because, you know, you're just taking somebody's word. And what if the guy who's evaluating Pete, he loves technique guys. He thinks Pete's going to be the best offensive lineman in or the best tackle in the draft, but I'm a mauler guy, so I don't think so. So now if I just believe him without looking at the player, I'm getting misinformed. I'm getting a bad impression. So I like I read up on guys, I look at as much video as I can get my hands on, and then I try to evaluate them based on what I see and what I like.
Or it could be a scout who's connected to a team that is so focused on the pass more so than the run, so therefore they value offensive linemen who are more towards the finesse technique type of standpoint as opposed to the brawlers who Paul just alluded to. So I think that's an important note. When you read these breakdowns, what is the background to that scout? What system did he come from? Because that certainly influences how they view players. Let's head back to the phone lines here, and let's check in with Jason in Texas. Jason, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Jason. What's happening?
Hey, you know, just so good that the draft is finally here, so we can finally see who the Giants get a pick. We can move on and start getting to business. But let me ask you this. Out of any pick or situation, what would be the worst for each of you? Like, that would just leave you in not feeling good.
In other words, what would be the worst case scenario where the Giants pick a guy and I just shook my head and said I didn't like it?
Right, exactly.
I don't think that can happen at 9. There are too many good players.
I think there's so much substance and depth here that even if you go in various different positions, you're going to get some good value in return.
I mean, as in any draft, you're only going to find out a couple of years down the road whether the guy panned out or not. So, I mean, whether or not the guy they pick turns out to be an all-pro, we're not going to know that for a while. But in terms of when you leave the draft tonight and you say that the Giants pick a good player at 9, I don't think there's any question at 9 they're going to get a really good prospect, a guy who everybody has a good report on. Whether or not it's a position you want, that's a personal subjective preference.
And Jason,
preference.
Keep this in mind related to last year's draft, and we were talking about this with respect to Art Stapleton earlier in the program. At this time last year, let's go back to 2014 draft day, how many people were talking about Odell Beckham being tied to the Giants? How many people were talking about that?
Nobody.
So, you right, know, there could there, Jason, there could be a player that we haven't necessarily been emphasizing or focused on it. The Giants have graded extremely high, and they take him. And then, who knows, could become a big-time playmaker. And that's exactly what happened with Odell Beckham. So that's why when you ask the question, who would I all of a sudden see them take and have one of these responses, like, oh, my God, what's going on? I'm not going to have that response because I could have had that for Odell Beckham, and look at what Odell Beckham did. He quieted all the skeptics, if there were any skeptics at the time.
No, true that, because I have faith in the organization, and I know that whatever pick they make, exactly, it's going to be some talent. And exactly, we're not going to know anything until a few years down the road whether or not that pick was a good one or not. Just was wondering if there might be any type of situation, or, you know, possibly, I know that trading out of the spot, anything past the 14th pick might not be a good, you know, wouldn't feel good about that. Just was wondering if there's any player out there that you guys just totally just would not want to see the Giants pick.
I really
out
can't.
Of those top levels.
I couldn't name you a player. And even if you picked a position, my answer to you would be, well, if they do grab a position that appears to be a strength or there's a lot of depth on the roster
they
right
probably
now,
have a plan B that we don't know about.
Absolutely. Or my answer would be, look at the injury bug that plagued this team last season. You can never have enough at all of the respective positions.
Thanks for the call.
Hey, I appreciate you guys, and thanks for all you guys.
Appreciate that, Jason. Thanks so much for waiting.
The only thing I would say, if you're really stuck on the fact that you want them to take a first-round pro-ready offensive lineman at 9, my guess, based on looking at everything and talking to people outside the building, is that you could not go lower than 13. Even at 14, the Dolphins may start a run on offensive linemen. And so it's going to be really tough if you move down, unless you're dealing with the Dolphins, because they're probably not going to go up to trade for a lineman. If they go up to make a trade, they're probably going to go up to make a trade to get one of those receivers, I would think, if they're still sitting there. But right after that, you got a run of teams like the Niners and the Texans and, you know, the Dolphins, again, in that mix there, that I think that's where the offensive linemen are really going to start to go. So that would be really dangerous.
Well, here's another thing I'll throw out, Paul. And you and I were talking about this in one of our recent mailbags for Giants.com about the draft history for the Giants when they've been in the top 10. The last time they were in the top 10 was 2004 with Eli Manning and Phillip Rivers being swapped. But they essentially acquired the number one overall pick in value. Prior to that, just to set the scene here, 1996, 1997 is when you have to go back, that the Giants had a top 10 pick. I'm not talking about they made a trade. I'm talking about when the Giants were in the top 10. Before 2004, you have to go back to 1996 and 1997. In those back-to-back years, they made their respective selections.
Right.
So I'm a track record guy. I like to look at that. They don't have a history of all of a sudden shopping and removing themselves from the top 10 when they are in that spot.
Well, Jerry Reese has never made a trade within the first round in his time as a Giants GM. And if you go back to 1979 when George Young was appointed GM, the Giants, outside of the Rivers Manning thing, have only moved up or down in the first round 3 other times. It is not usually the way they want to go. They moved down, wound up with Kiwanuka. They moved up. They got Shockey. They moved up. They got Will Allen. And way, way, way back when, and again, this goes back to George Young, they moved up to get William Roberts. But that's it. That's it. 3 times up and 1 time down. Nele Sinorismos was later on, not first round. He wasn't first round. He was going down. The other 3 guys were going up. They don't do it. It's just not their way.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We check in with, does Ryan have a location? No, Ryan. We're just checking in with Ryan. Ryan from a land of the unknown. How are we doing, Ryan?
How you doing, guys? From Jersey,
well,
by the way.
All right, Jersey. Good to hear, Ryan. What's happening?
I just want to say, great show, guys. I love it.
Appreciate
there's
that.
Nothing going on, a lot that's going on this time of year, and those Giants fans, even though you're beating a dead horse, we seem to love hearing it get beat. Love your show.
Thanks so much. Thanks for watching and listening.
One thing I want to point out, I believe John Schmel kind of called out Odell Beckham. He was the one that mentioned him the most in your show last year, so if anybody... As for, I think, 2 callers ago, was talking about Odell Beckham Jr. Nobody
Ryan,
thought that.
Ryan, now you're giving me a reason to have to pat him on the back tomorrow when he's back for tomorrow's program. You know, I mean, you guys are killing me here. You know, we don't need to reminisce that much between Paul and John. I mean, I'm the middle guy here. You're killing me. Anyway, continue. Yeah.
Also,
In seriousness, though, he did mention Odell Beckham, and he talks about it through the hallways every single day. So you're 100% right about that.
And he's also mentioning Danny Shelton this year a lot too. So wouldn't be surprised.
You wrote it down in a notebook, Ryan, so that tomorrow when he's on the program with me, if that turns out to be the selection, we're going to have another celebration for John Schmelk. So this is wonderful, beautiful.
Quick question: if for some reason Scherf is on the board and the Giants do not pick him, is somebody going to be standing by with a crash cart for PDOT?
He can answer.
Am I going to be ready?
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. I feel strongly about the guy because I think there's value and there's need.
I agree with you. I would love the Giants to take him, too. I'm just making fun.
Well, that's cool. And last year I felt there was value and need when I thought that Zach Martin should have been the guy. But then I also understood that if a top five guy drops. I mean, and look at how good he turned out to be. So that's great. See, to me, they got Richburg in the second round, which was a pro-ready offensive lineman, albeit he wound up playing guard for a year because they needed help at guard. But that alleviated some of the angst over, they didn't get an offensive lineman that they really needed to upgrade the position in round one. They got one at least in round two, and he turned out to be a starter. So what I'm telling you now is I would think, and this is me strictly talking now, this is nobody else in the building, I would think that they're probably a good chance they're going to get a starting caliber offensive lineman in the first couple of rounds. If it's not in round one, I would think it's going to be round two. But again, the need component and the value component, I think they match up to where that should happen. If it doesn't, I don't understand it, but that doesn't mean that they're wrong. Heck, that's what they get paid to do. So I'll sit back and say, okay, let it play out. I mean, what else can you do?
Yeah. So my next question, Paul, is actually for you specifically because I figured since you more as the scouting kind of guy yourself.
I got such a headache over the last 2 months.
It's a little different from the current draft. I want to talk about some of the guys that are on the roster playing the offensive line position. And how I just was curious as to how you maybe rated them coming out, like those backup guys, like the Matt McCants, Eric Herman, Brandon Mosley, or Dallas Reynolds. I know he even started for, I think it was the Eagles.
Yeah.
What was your opinion on those guys when they came out, and how are they moving to, like, I guess, to address the development that they needed to address?
Well, when those guys, I did not know a lot about those guys when they came out. Remember, like McCants was a free agent. Herman was a very, very late round pick. What I try to do like this year, I looked at about 120 players who I did serious video film work on and research on, calls, phone calls, et cetera, et cetera. I try to go three rounds deep, and if I can go four, I try to go about four. The Giants' fourth round pick is at 108. So I stopped at about 120 players. I picked out about 120 guys.
You gave
yourself
okay, some wiggle room.
Yeah, but that's it.
Okay.
So when you're talking about guys who are going to be, you know, later on, I'm going to have to go by what other people are saying. And that's a dangerous way to go, but I'm one person. I can't do it all, you know. So I don't have any scatter reports on those. You know what I say to you about that? And I mean this. That's why rookie minicamp is huge for me. Because I want to see these guys. I can't wait to. And what I do is every rookie minicamp, I pick out an undrafted rookie free agent. And I say, okay, he's my dark horse to make the team this year. And in the past, I've had guys like Will Hill, Bruce Johnson. I picked Michael Cox. I've done really well picking those guys. I did not pick Kerry Wynn. I missed on him. But I've had a lot of really good guys. Brian Witherspoon, remember Witherspoon? I picked a lot of these guys in the rookie minicamp and said, watch him. I think he's the receiver last year, Washington, Corey Washington. I had him last year. I didn't have Kerry Wynn. I had Corey Washington. Well, guess what? I did okay. He made the team.
Did?
That rookie minicamp's huge for me. And so that's all I can say. Is that a complete answer enough for you?
Good to me. And this last closing argument, no tweeners. We don't need that. It's not what our defense needs. Can we get something that fits the scheme? I don't think they'll do anything with a tweener, but I just hope not.
Okay. All right, Ryan.
Thank you very much,
Thanks
guys.
Thanks so much
Appreciate
for winning. You got it. What a dissertation. That was impressive, Paul. I mean, well, the real blow-by-blow breakdown of all the undrafted rookies.
I mean, I did well. I've done well the last decade. But, you know, that's why last year when we didn't have a rookie minicamp and I was forced just to pick off of the August camp, it was hard. It was really hard. You know, but, hey, Washington made the team. I would like to have seen him, you know, produce more. Hopefully this year he'll produce more. But that's just one of my little fun things that I like to do.
And there will be plenty of new players for Paul to get enamored with in the next few days. Let's head back to the phone lines. We want to try to get in as many calls as we can as we take you up till the top of the hour. Let's go to David in South Carolina. David, what's happening?
How you doing, boss?
Doing well, Dave. What's happening with you?
Not much. I just want to find out. I know the Giants have about 8 picks this year. Do you think they're going to go a little bit more offense, a little more defense?
You know, you think they've got to go more offense, but it all depends on who's on the board when they're picking. I mean, they still go with the philosophy of best player available. I mean, they're not going to just throw that out the window and say, look, we got to pick, you know, need for the sake of need. They're still going to go with guys who are high above the cluster if they're there.
Though, David, to give you an answer, if we went by need and let's throw out best player available.
Went by need?
If you go by need and you look at last year's numbers, my answer to you would be more defensive players than offensive players. But that's also based on last year's numbers. You know, a lot changes during the course of offseason workouts and so forth.
I mean, I will tell you this. Offensively, if you just want to look at the Giants' depth chart, and I love what Jerry Reese said the other day. Of course, we want to upgrade at every position. We want to do better at all positions. And he's right. What general manager shouldn't want to do better at all positions? But if you look at the Giants' depth chart, I think we think the quarterback's okay. But at wide receiver, you could certainly use somebody if Victor Cruz can't come back from injury. You don't know the answer to that. I think the running back is pretty deep. I think they're okay there. But could they use another tight end? Somebody at least to compete with the Robinsons and the Fells of the world? Sure, you'd like to believe so. How many offensive linemen do you want to bring in? You know, one starter, maybe two or three backups even to compete with what you have? I mean, you might bring in three offensive linemen. I mean,
More competition, it never hurts.
Competition's a good thing. So, that's a hard question to answer.
I hear you. And one last question is that who is the tight end from the Giants that they called the JPP? Was it Robinson?
Adrian Robinson,
right.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to him?
He's still on the roster.
I mean, no, I understand, but I mean, like, he was supposed to be this great, and, you know, he hasn't fulfilled, I guess you could say.
Well, I mean, it gets back to the competition aspect, and David, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Thanks.
Number one, when Adrian Robinson was drafted, he was out of Cincinnati, and he had to finish school. So
yes.
He wound up missing some of the introductory courses. Correct. It's in when I say introductory courses, I mean for the Giants, not necessarily classes at school. So he comes in, now he's got to learn a new system when a number of the other rookies, Paul, were already adapted to the scheme. So that put him behind a little bit.
Yes.
Injuries was another aspect that also stunted and limited his growth. And at the same time, while he's on the sideline, you have other tight ends. And last season, you have a guy named Larry Donnell who takes advantage of his opportunity. So I think the health and the playbook, that combination, unfortunately, proved to be an obstacle for Adrian Robinson over these last few years.
Donnell earned the snaps, won the job, got the playing time. That's it.
That's what it comes down to. Let's head back to the phone lines, and we go to Rocky in Panama City. Rocky, what's happening?
How are you doing, Pete?
Hi.
How are we doing, Rocky?
A ball of emotions like every draft. Coming up to it, but I'm thinking all signs are pretty much pointing to Dupree right now. That's our first pick. Not that I'm okay with it, but I hope we go that way instead of the O-lineman like Paul's wanting.
So you're saying Bud Dupree would be your pick. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think that's what Jerry's going to do. That wouldn't be my pick. I want to trade down and
everybody wants to be GM at this point.
I would be okay with trading all the way down to 19 and picking up one of the hidden gems in this draft, Eli Harold, and play him at linebacker. He used to play wide receiver in high school. I think he could cover, but
tremendous
as long
athlete.
As we trade down and get extra picks, I'm okay with it.
I mean, it depends on how far down you want to go. I mean, you're telling me you want to trade down. Where?
Well, actually, I wanted to go to 12 and grab Landon Collins, but everybody tells me that's a little high for the safety, which
I would think so.
I think it was
Rocky, let me ask you this, and this is relevant to what a few other callers brought up. If you have a player that you love at number 9, who cares what the experts say about it's too high, it's too low?
If you have conviction, take him.
Take the guy. Stop worrying about trading back, trading forward, trading sideways. If you're at number 9, the guy at the top of your board is there. Take the guy. It's as simple as that. I'm not trying to make this a comedy hour, but you know everybody's trying to make this mathematical equation. You got number 9, the guy's there. Oh. End of the day, take the guy, period.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was Rob Rangel for CBS that had Landon Collins ranked number 10 on his big board, so I didn't think it was that far of a stretch, considering the need value there. But
well, Collins, the safety out of Bama, the thing about him is that early on, it seemed as though a lot of people thought he was that high, and everyone was looking at the Giants' need, and I think that pushed a lot of people into thinking him. But I think the more and more people thought about it, they realized, well, wait a minute, the Giants don't have to go for need. That's never the way they operate anyway. And as you saw people start to pull back from that, I didn't see any other teams getting connected to Collins in that, you know, 10 to 15 range. All of a sudden people were like, well, wait a minute. Maybe his value really should be here and that he was artificially pushed up because we were looking at the Giants' needs.
And that's what tends to happen. You saw two safeties on the roster, and you said, oh, wow, this would fill a void.
Right. Especially when Antrell Roll signed with Chicago, I think a lot of people really
hit the panic
exploded.
Exactly. Oh, my God, we got to take a safety.
They got to get a safety.
Yeah, exactly.
And I like the signings of Chamberlain and Dwayne Harris, but I think that crippled us from a salary cap standpoint, the numbers game as far as rookies coming in because of all the running backs and kick returners. Like, I'm really high on David Johnson from Northern Iowa. I thought he could have returned the kicks, lined up at receiver like Shane Vereen, played in the backfield if need be, and I think we're going to miss out on a couple really good prospects like Eli Harold or David Johnson. But
Rocky, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. We want to try to get to a few more callers before we end the program, but you've got proven veterans, as Rocky just alluded to, that you know they have a track record and a history in terms of the return game. So I would rather you bring in that guy than all of a sudden hope that a rookie translates, Paul.
Yeah, yeah. The one thing that you have to keep in mind, that's fine. That's okay. Okay. Yeah,
yeah,
Lena just gave us a thumbs
there.
Up. He said we go to 2:30 because we're getting flooded with calls. You guys are loving us, and we appreciate that because we love you guys,
right,
too.
We're going to do another half hour.
Why not? Sure. Here's the one thing I want you to remember. The overriding factor, Lance, and every coach and GM will tell you this. When we bring a guy into the facility, and this is not just Giants talking, this is every team in the NFL, unless he's just a training camp body, because you have to fill out, you know, obviously training camp snaps, and you know, for example, you'll bring in two kickers or two punters because you want to alleviate some of the stress on the kicker. Unless it's that situation, when you bring a guy into your facility, you've got a very strong belief he's got a chance to compete to make your 53. Otherwise, you're wasting your time. There's no other reason to waste his time or your time or your coach's times or your scout's times about just bringing in guys for the heck of it. You better have a pretty good belief, and this really applies now. Not just for the draft picks, but for the undrafted free agents you call on Sunday night. You're calling guys who you think really, hey, you know what? He has a realistic chance of beating somebody on our 53. That's why we're inviting him here. You know, these guys in the next 3 days, they're not the training camp fillers.
And think about now how attractive an undrafted free agent looks at the Giants now, knowing that Kerry Wynn managed to go from undrafted free agent to roster.
The last 10 years, how many guys they've had like that.
But that's a good selling point.
It's a great selling point.
From an organizational standpoint, I'm getting on the phone when I'm telling my scouts, call these undrafted kids, and then you could say, hey, look at 2011, look at 2012, look at 2013. This guy we brought in didn't have big expectations. He impressed us. He made the 53.
I'll tell you what. If there is a guy out there, and let's call him again, Player X. All right, Player X is getting a lot of work here today. I'll tell you what, he may be drafted in the first round.
What about Player Y? Can we give him some love?
I don't know. He's a second rounder. I don't like his technique. But Player X is sitting out there, and let's say, for argument's sake, he is a corner. Okay? And at the end of the draft, turns out the Giants didn't get an extra corner. Well, you know, if he gets a call on Sunday night as an undrafted rookie free agent, he's got to be saying to himself, look at the Giants' depth chart. I have confidence in myself. I think I can make the back end of that depth chart. I think I can get a spot on their 53. Well, and they got a good track record for giving undrafted rookie free agents a chance. They look at those people seriously. They take these people seriously. They're willing to give them a shot. They got a bunch of them in the last 10 years that made their roster. Well, I'm much more likely to sign with the Giants then, and you'll get a quality undrafted rookie free agent much easier than you would another team that does not have that kind of track record or maybe has a much better depth chart at corner. I mean, why would the guy sign there? He pretty much knows he's not going to make it.
Especially if you're a corner and you got seven guys on the roster already.
Every agent will tell you if he's got a back-end player, once you start getting to the back of the sixth round and then into the seventh round, they'd almost rather their guy not get drafted.
So you can choose where to go.
Because then they can pick where to go instead of having their guy picked. And if their guy's getting picked, maybe in that instance, they're just saying, look, he's a special teams guy. You know, we're just picking him to be special. We think he's a good athlete. He's a special teams guy. We'll pick him. And let's just say it's a corner, but your team, the team that picks him is stuffed at corner. He's not going to get a chance to make the team as a corner. That can happen unless somebody gets hurt. But if you're an undrafted rookie free agent and you've got five teams called you, now you're looking for guys who are thin at corner because that's where I want to place my guy because he's got a chance to play, not just be on special teams. He's going to earn something better than that.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. Number of people sending in tweets. We'll get to those too. We're going to go till 2:30 p.m. Eastern. The marathon continues here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Once again, really appreciate all the interaction on today's program as we get you set for the draft. Let's go to Derek in Atlanta. Derek, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
How we doing, Derek?
Hi.
Hey, Paul, I gave you a little challenge with Sheriff this week, but I hope you get your guy tonight.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. I wanted to say, do you really think that Odell Beckham was a fifth overall player in this draft last year, or that's kind of like a revisionist history?
Oh, no, no. The Giants had Beckham right up there, and he fell. It's not the first time it's happened, and it does happen, you know, over the course of time, because let's face it, the draft is so unpredictable. There will be guys who fall. And from
I just remember talking about the draft quite a bit last year. And
five players
that definitely was ahead of him in most people's.
No, I'll tell you, what I remember going in is that Beckham was like the third or fourth wide receiver on a lot of pundits' boards. And
yeah,
so it's not much to say that it's a stretch that they might have seen him. And if you watch the show Finding Giants, the scouting documentary show that was on NFL Network, now that's not revisionist history. They're showing you stuff that happened in real time. And if you watch the clips that they showed you from the combines and the draft room, the Giants' reactions at that time, that's legitimate stuff. That's not dummied up. That's not anybody editing things funny or redoing things. It's not a reenactment. It's not a drama. That stuff's real. And if you saw what they were saying at that time in real-life filming situations, they loved Beckham. So, if you have any doubts, go back and look at that stuff. You'll know they had him as a top five. And from 5 to 12, believe it or not, you and I will sit here and say, wow, that's a far drop. In the National Football League, that's not that far of a drop. That kind of stuff happens all the time because beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Every team ranks a player at a different level. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, so what I wanted to say here is, for me, I think another call kind of covered a little bit, but there's this, in the first round, you have the fifth-year option on your players, right?
Yes.
So that's why I wanted to, the player and positions that I was looking at, Mari Cooper, Vic Beasley, Eric Flowers, and Trey Wayans. These are all positions that are high priced on your team and would be kind of worth, you would want them to be under 5-year contracts on your team, positions. And I like the players. So I'm hoping we get one of those guys out of this draft And that's all I got really got to say today. And good luck tonight. I hope you guys enjoy the draft.
All right, well, you as well, Derek. Hope you enjoyed as well. Giants fans, all a part of this process.
Well, here's the thing. Thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. Here's the thing, Lance, that, you know, I think most people – let me go grab that. We have
gotta
a technical –
do the little technical side. See what happens when we extend the show? Paul Dottino's got to be the tech engineer. He's got to be the host. He's got to be the social media director. The man is a jack of all trades, people. You know, he comes in and out of the picture. It's truly amazing. This is really the art of what goes on behind the scenes here at Giants.com.
I'm still trying to figure out how to clone myself, but I don't think the world is ready for that.
I don't know if I'm ready for that. The hell with the world. I don't know if I'm ready for that.
What were we going to say? I lost my train of thought.
Well, we were talking about the various draft picks and how they may be ranked differently by different teams.
Oh, yeah.
And that obviously influences where they're going to necessarily go.
And here's the other thing that also alters a lot of values besides that beauty in the eye of the beholder thing. It's also the medical and the character stuff. Because let's say your doctors are a little bit more leery about that guy's past high ankle sprain than my doctors are. Well, guess what? It's going to drop the guy. Let's say that I think that the speeding ticket, let's just say for argument's sake, that player X got was an immature, really nothing I can really do about it. I snuff it off. It was just a kid being a kid. But you decide that, you know what, that's a character issue. That's a bigger problem for
me. You're not willing to overlook that, whereas maybe another team is.
And guess what? All of a sudden, guy drops 10, 15, 12 spots. I was told that a player who has a minor injury that a medical staff looks at and says, you know what, we think it's okay. It's probably not that big a deal, but we agree with you. It's a minor injury. It's something to want to keep in the back of your mind. I was told that one of those kinds of players can lose as much as a half a round on a value board. I mean,
yeah,
that's the kind of variable that none of us in this room, none of us on the draft guides, and none of the fans out there can really discuss with any type of substance because we don't have those medical reports, Lance. We don't have those personality profiles. We don't have those characterizations of what the guy is as a person or his background checks. Those things all affect the value board. And no matter how much tape and video I look at about a player, I don't have it either.
And that's why you're only projecting based on the info you know.
That's all you can do. That's all you can do. Believe what you see. Look at the games. Look at the tape. Believe what you see. Hold conviction based on that. But then if somebody says to you that there's some other stuff behind closed doors, that medical or character issues that you don't have anything, any knowledge about, well, guess what? That's going to drop the guy. I'll give you a great example. Rolando McClain. When Rolando McClain came out some years ago in the draft, I was very, very much targeting him. I thought he was going to be an outstanding pick for the Giants to be their next middle linebacker. And I thought they may even have to move up to get him because at that point he was rated highly based on his skill set and the Giants were not going to be in that vicinity. They were going to have to move up if they really wanted to get him. And I thought that, boy, based on their need, based on his value, I thought the price moving up, I thought it would be a very intelligent and logical move to go get him. And you know what? Turned out, based on what's happened to Rolando McClain since he's been in the National Football League, a variety of things that have happened with him, including that he took a year off.
In and out of the league, yeah.
You could make a very strong argument that I would have been a fool to make the trade to move up to grab that guy as high as he went, you know? And there's a great example. Rolando McClain has a terrific skill set. I think we all agree with that. But there was a bunch of other stuff that, you know, made it not so good.
And you can make the argument that it wasn't until the last few years where he's actually been able to stay on the field number one and live up to expectations to a certain degree, because prior to that, you know, there were some off-the-field issues and it was up and down in terms of whether or not he'd stay on the field.
Even with the Cowboys right now, they've re-signed him to a one-year contract, and I think they're waiting for even a possible NFL hearing on something else that off-the-field related that the Cowboys are anxious to get solved, because they're not sure if he's going to be missing any time or not. I think they're hoping he's not, and I think, you know, the league is only going to have the final say on that. But, you know, these are things we talk about, and that's why, you know, again, believe what you see, have conviction on it, but there's a lot of stuff we don't know about.
Let's head back to the phone lines here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Glad you could join us for Thursday's edition as we are taking you till 2:30 p.m. Eastern. A number of you are on the line, so we're going to continue to extend the show here this afternoon. And let's head back to the phone lines. We check in with Sean in California. Sean, what's happening? Sean, are you there?
Hello?
Sean going once? Sean going twice? Sean is a man of very few words today. Let's check in with Izzy in the Bronx. Izzy, what's happening?
Next pick is on the clock.
Izzy, are you there? What Hello? Happened? Everybody was so talkative earlier. Now we've quieted
Hello.
Everybody. Izzy,
hey,
what's happening?
I'm here. I'm here.
We hear you loud and clear. Oh, we hear you loud and clear, Izzy. You
oh,
are on
okay,
the clock right now. So
all
what's
right.
happening?
Hey, I'm just letting you know. You know, I'm excited. The day is finally here.
I could tell you're excited. Absolutely. You don't need to hide it from
for
us.
Real.
Yeah.
I got my Giants draft day attire. But real quick, I got a couple of points, fellas. Paul, I'm with you, man. I feel like our most important needs right about now, I would say offensive line. And my opinion about that is, given the strides the Giants made last year, as far as, you know, getting acclimated with the system at the end of the season and
right.
and everything that was going on, I feel offensive line, to keep that momentum, I would say that was one of our weakness points last year. And with the depth that we have acquired with, you know, off-season picks and pickups, the defensive line is a lot more depth-filled as far as opposed to the offensive line. So I definitely say that. And another point that I really didn't take consideration, so I had a conversation with a friend of mine, that bringing back Mike Sullivan, what it's going to do for Eli, I think it's going to take him to a next level, in my opinion, along with learning the second year of the system. So I would definitely say offensive linemen and linebackers is my greatest opinion as far as what we need to build our team and make it back stronger to get back to the Super Bowl. And I just wanted to know, as a question, what do you guys think that the Giants should do as far as if a player don't fall, let's say the Brandon Scherff, Paul, and we have to be faced with like a Amari Cooper or, you know, a prolific offensive help.
Being faced with Amari Cooper is not necessarily a death sentence, okay? That's not
deal. That's what I'm saying. So my question, Paul, is because, you know, what you want for offensive line just as much as me, would you be cool with us picking up another prolific wide receiver to heighten our offense? And give it that much more power?
I will tell you this. My second choice for the Giants, if Scherff is gone, is Trey Waynes, the cornerback out of Michigan State, because I think value also meets need with him. He would be right behind Scherff for me. If Amari Cooper dropped, I would have a very, 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 very difficult time making the pick because I understand how terrific he is and how high he probably is on their board. I could not blame them if they took him. I would understand it. Because there is a certain amount of, hey, he's a super, super, superstar, and Victor Cruz is coming off of a
and
serious
Izzy,
injury.
I don't mean to cut you off. We're going to have to let you go. We seem to be getting some reaction from the phone. Maybe the phone just doesn't agree with whatever Paul is saying
right now.
Heard
that static, huh?
Oh, it was some heavy static.
I tried
there.
To give him a respectable answer.
Well, it wasn't anything that you said. See, the phone knew you love Brandon Scherff, so the phone doesn't want to hear anything that happens if Brandon Sheriff's not there. Let's hear from Jason in New York. Jason, what's on your mind? Jason, we seem to be getting some feedback, so while we try to get to you,
okay.
In the meantime, we'll get to Rudy in New York. Rudy, what's happening?
Hi.
Hi.
How we doing, Rudy?
Doing good, doing good. A couple of quick things. First off,
You know, I was listening. I'm always listening to the show, by the way. And it's only my second time being able to call in and reach, but I listened to you guys for a long time.
Well, we appreciate
really
that.
The show.
Thanks so much.
But I do have one little beef before I ask my question or make my statement.
Absolutely. Start with the drama. No worries.
I didn't see you guys put my prediction on the wall. I threw my prediction out there the first time I called as a first-time caller, and no one threw it on the wall with Charlie's prediction, and I kind of want to see it up there because I'm going to call back next year or during the season, during the playoff run, and let you guys know that we're taking it all the way.
Well, Rudy, you're in luck because I have a pen right now, and I am next to the wall. So
and there's
you're,
Charlie's
you're
thing
in
right
luck.
There.
So
write
Charlie,
it on Charlie's note.
Charlie is not going to be all alone on the board here. I'm taking the pins out. I'm going to irritate John Schmelk because he's going to get annoyed that
yes.
I actually moved the paper. But
yes,
I'm doing
angry.
This for your well-being, Rudy. So when he screams and yells at me, just you remember who I'm going to turn
well,
to.
Well, it's on video, though. We can go back to the argument.
We can't go
it's
to
on
it.
Video.
Okay, so Rudy, I got the pin out.
You're
got
saying
back on that
the whole ball of wax, the Lombardi Trophy.
There you go.
All right. You ready? Listen, 11 wins, playoff run, Super Bowl.
Okay, right. So 11-5 then is the regular season record.
Yep.
Okay, and now you're tacking on more. You don't just want me to write down the record. You want me to write down postseason run plus Super Bowl. Is that correct?
All right.
Okay.
That's right.
And folks, please, understand we only got a few of these folks that we do this with because otherwise we'd wallpaper it with predictions and we wouldn't have
yes.
any of these glorious accoutrements on the wall.
No,
so I don't want to be doing that with everybody. But anyway, thank you so much. I certainly think that Jerry Reese would be very, very happy to hear your prediction.
Wait, Rudy, you got more now? We put your name on the wall. We approved everything, and this guy wants to take more advantage of the phone
well,
call.
Well, no, I just want to say this really quickly. And Lance, you're not going to like this too much, but I kind of agree with the go with the sheriff. And if he's not there, you know, we should take that cornerback. Well, first of all, we got to protect our quarterback. You know, so I do want that Brandon Scherff pick. And if he's not there, we'll take that cornerback. I do see that value meeting need. Outside of that, you know, no matter who we pick at number 9, it's going to be a great pick. And we don't need any wide receivers. I mean, if they fall, great, we'll take them. But we really don't need them. We have so much depth in that position.
Yeah, the need component's not very high, but if a Cooper drops,
say no to that.
I get that. I get that. Yeah. And that's a reluctant okay, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. and the last point that I wanted to make was, you know, when everybody last year, they weren't talking about Odell Beckham, you know, I truly believe, not to take anything from Odell, because he's awesome. He's one of my favorite players. You know, I got his jersey, like I love him. But I do believe that because of the system he's in also is one of the greatest reasons why he's as good or his talent shines as well as it does. I mean, to be honest with you, if let's say he went to a team like Washington where there's some quarterback issues there, I don't believe that he'd be able to shine as much as he did with a team like Giants who has a great Super Bowl quarterback.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I wouldn't say it's the system. It's any receiver is going to look much better when he's got someone to throw it to him.
Absolutely. I think it goes hand in hand, which is what you're emphasizing, Rudy, where the quarterback helps make the wide receiver and vice versa.
Yeah.
Right, exactly, which is why I also believe that the Giants know what they're doing. They know that if they pick whoever that they're going to pick is going to be for their system and it's going to help them, you know, take them to that next level, you know. So, and Spags is back, so I'm sure that also is going to have a lot to do with the draft as well.
Absolutely, Rudy, and appreciate the phone
good
call.
Stuff.
Thanks so much for weighing in here as we continue
Thank
to move
you.
Along on the phone lines, unless you want to add something real quick.
I was just going to say that big props to Giants fans out there because our phone lines are probably busier than the phone lines in the draft room in Chicago because I know the NFL is really burning them up in Chicago right now as they're getting ready for tonight's picks, but my goodness, we're just getting flooded here. And so far, nobody agreed with that caller yesterday who wanted to trade me to the Tennessee Titans for that number
that's
two
true.
Overall
well, that's
pick.
That's a positive sign. And nobody's called up to have the Giants take Marcus Mariota at number 9 because in our mock draft, that's exactly what had happened. Frank in Tampa, who had
yes.
the 9th selection, because Mariota dropped, Mariota, excuse me, dropped because everybody else passed.
And we still
him.
Didn't give our top tens yet, correct. But we got more calls.
Well, let's keep running the phone calls, and we will eventually get to our quick version of a mock draft.
We'll
really
be
against the clock. Let's check in with Jason in New York. Jason, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Hi.
Doing well, Jason. What's happening with you?
Love your show. First, I want to start out with a little advice to the fans calling in. So I'm listening to the show, and I know y'all got a lot of calls, so I said, let me go take a shower real quick. My name will come up. I got the phone on the bathroom. And my...
That's a dedicated fan base there.
I hope it was waterproof.
My number hits. I have soap in my eye. I'm slipping, trying to get out of the shower to grab the phone. And as soon as I pick it up, you say, it's a lot of static online. Call right back. So I call right back, and luckily I got through. So this is Jason.
Great.
New York and living in the East Bay.
Well, Jason, I appreciate the passion and the dedication.
I
hope the soap's not in the eyes anymore, though. Did you finish and take care of your business? That's all priority right. Number one.
Oh, I'm standing here in the living room now, soaking wet. Still
all right. TMI, as my daughter says, too much information. Please go on to your comment or question about the Giants.
Oh, we've touched a nerve here.
The only thing I wanted to do today, because I do have to go to work in a little bit, is just make a statement about all the fans that want a trade and so on. I was listening to Jerry Reese speak at the press conference. And he sounded like my grandmother when he said, look, I'm not going to just bounce around the chart just to be cute. And I just thought that was so awesome for him to say that, because we don't really do that, and we've done well, you know. Yeah, we had some off years here and there, but Eli always gets his numbers, you know. I always look at that. So I just feel like bouncing around, trying to pick, you're going to get something good at 9. Hopefully offensive, because I think Eli do need protection, but I just feel like bouncing around, trading, and so on. Why even go there? Why even go there? But love your show. Say hello to John for me, and I guess I should go back and finish my shower.
Sounds like a good idea there, Jason. Appreciate the phone call. How about that? Squeezing us in between preparing for work.
Oh, man.
And I thought you were the one that was a little off the cuckoo's nest here and there. Now we have somebody willing to go in and out of the shower to try to get on the show.
Can I do this? And I know we have so many great fans and so many great callers who are so loyal to BPKL. He's got to be the caller of the century. He's got to be.
I haven't heard anybody go
interrupted
his
shower to talk to us on the program
and
today.
He said he was slipping and sliding, so he was putting his welfare to his side to make sure that he could answer the phone.
I can't That's possibly
impressive.
Have any more respect.
That is impressive. We may need to get a guy like that in the war room just because of his dedication there. That is something. As we continue to move along here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Lance Middlepole, Dottino with you. Started at noon, and the marathon continues as we get you set for the draft.
Then this is right at home for you, huh? Sirius 24/7 radio. I mean, that's kind of like what we're doing today.
And considering I did a 3-hour program before I even came here, I'm running on near an empty tank. But we continue to do it because obviously we're all passionate. We're all excited for the festivities tonight. Let's go to – who we got next, Lee? Like, okay, we got Sean in California. Sean, what's happening?
How you doing, guys?
Doing well, Sean. How's everything with you?
I'm good, good. I'm Giants fan for life, Giants for life.
There you go.
I was wondering, what is our chances of drafting Kevin White in the first round? I know that we don't need depth in our wide receiver. I mean, like, we have an arsenal at wide receiver. But Eli Manning's going into his year where, you know, he might resign. He's probably going to resign. But just to give him an extra push on wide receiver help. And I was looking back, I was actually watching the NFL, man. Like, and we did get Corey Webster and Justin Tuck the year after in 2005. I know that 10 years ago. But, I mean, like, how is the insurance in the second and the third round in this draft if he was to go with Kevin White in the first round? Because I feel like if you have Odell Beckham and Victor Cruz on the outside and we got Ruben Randle, how would it look if he was to get Kevin White with a Ben McAdoo's offense?
Can I just throw one thing out to you besides everything else we've already described about him and the different strategies in drafting? Let me just throw one other thing out to you. The Giants are hoping to be a more balanced offense this year than they were last season, where they were primarily a pass-oriented team because they pass-protected better than they run-blocked, and, of course, they had injuries in the backfield when Rashad Jennings went down. They're trying to establish more of a balanced attack, more of a ball control attack, more of a power game. Well, if you're really trying to do that, the only negative I could say about picking a Kevin White or an Amari Cooper at number nine, if they fell, you can't argue necessarily with the talent deal as much. Although, again, I get scared about guys who come up on the board real late like White has. But let's just say you don't argue with the skill set part of the value at number nine there. Philosophically speaking, that doesn't really help the Giants become more of a balanced offense, does it?
True.
And that's kind of countering the philosophy that they're trying to get back to.
True that.
So that's my take on that.
And, Sean, the other thing, you know, when you say, well, what are the chances Kevin White falls to the Giants, I think it really depends on the other teams in front of the Giants. How do they prioritize wide receivers? Will one of them go? Will Amari Cooper and Kevin White go? And whether or not that wide receiver is a good fit, remember, for the system, too. And not to take anything away from Kevin White, but Kevin White comes from a different offense than Amari Cooper does. Amari Cooper is coming from that Alabama offense, which is based more on the principles of the NFL, versus Kevin White, which is, you know, a more unique type of an offense, which
Cooper's,
is a little different than what Cooper dealt with.
Cooper's regarded as a more polished, more pro-ready guy, especially with route running.
Correct. That's a fair synopsis. And, Sean, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Thank you. You guys have a good day.
You got it, too, as well. Not a problem. Let's head back to the phone lines here. Let's go to Chris in New York. Chris, welcome aboard.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi.
Come on, Chris.
I just got three quick statements to make, and I'll let you guys go to your other callers. I know you guys are getting flooded here.
We are.
But I was listening to Paul earlier. He was saying he likes Trey Waynes after Brandon Scherff. I got to tell you, I'm a little bit scared about that. When your shuttle time is worse than your 40 time, I mean, I don't know. I've looked at a lot of his tape. He does have good press skills, but he still worries me. And then my next thing is I keep hearing people talk about safeties. We need safeties. Let's just let Nat Burhe, Cooper Taylor, Shockey Brown, Bennett Jackson, let's let them play. And then if they're terrible, then we can worry about it. But let's at least watch them play first. And lastly, it's about your show. I'd like to see some more Dan Solomon. Get some more Dan Solomon on the show.
Well, Dan is one of our best writers, so we will certainly pass along the kudos that you are a big fan of his.
Dan is very cool.
He is. He's a very cool guy. And I think he did make a brief appearance
on the
show with Anita Marks, I think, about a week ago or two.
And I like to talk about how he is so even keel. He'd be great to negotiate a trade on behalf of Jerry Reese because he's so calm and cool all the time. The one number that I want to give you just said about the 40 time and the shuttle time for Waynes, the numbers that NFL Draft Scout has given out, and that's Pro Football Exchange, for those of you who don't know the nomenclature with that. These guys are very, very legit. They had Waynes' fastest 40 unofficially at 4.23 and his shuttle at 4.39. Just so you know, those are at least reputable numbers for what he has done. I think at the combine he was like a 4.32 at the 40, if I'm not mistaken, but unofficially has timed in the 4.2s. Which is pretty wild.
And, Chris, I'll also get back to the point about how I understand you're looking over the numbers, but as we've talked about, combine, only one facet of
a very small, very big window
for a player. So you need to at least put things in perspective.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
Good talking to you guys.
Not a problem. Thanks so much for weighing in.
I like to equate Waynes to Sam Madison as I look at him as a player. And Sam didn't come out with, you know, world-class Olympic speed either. But, boy, did he have the technique down, and did he have the temperament down, and did he have the mental capacity to understand the game down. You know, the only knock you could put on Sam Madison is that he wasn't the greatest hitter in the world, you know. He wasn't going to intimidate people like, let's say, Mark Collinswood years ago from the Giants-Parcells era when they won Super Bowls. But he had everything else. Made, what, four or five Pro Bowls, helped the Giants win a Super Bowl.
And sometimes a player just clicks, feels comfortable with a team, and you never know what
he'd
you can get
out
of
him. He'd fit the system really
exactly.
well.
Exactly, and that's pretty much, I think, the main point. One real quick thing that I want to throw out related to what Chris said before we get back to our final call. You know, he talked about the safety position, and we've discussed this at great length. And, you know, I continue to emphasize, and I may sound like a broken record, Paul, but I look at what happened with the tight end position last year, how Larry Dinell was on the roster.
Right.
They gave an opportunity to an internal candidate. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with saying that can't happen again with safety. Now, a lot of people said, well, wait a minute, Lance. Burhey, Taylor, more of the strong safety variety, not necessarily the free safety variety. I buy that, but all we're looking at maybe now is one of the two, at least to be filled by somebody currently on the roster, Paul. And I don't think that's necessarily going out and stretching that by any means of the imagination.
No, but there are so many second and third round make-it safeties in this draft. If you're the Giants, you'd like to believe you get a decent value there if you can get your hands on one.
Which would be one of the two safeties,
right,
though. But the other safety, I'm saying, could very well come from the roster.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you don't
I'm
have
sorry.
To necessarily
miss,
go on and experiment.
Miss,
that's
that went
fine.
Right over my head.
Just not a problem. No, I would agree with you. I think you can get, per se, a free safety in one of the later
yeah.
rounds or even the second round. But there's potential. And if you heard Nat Burhey, by the way, at his press conference, that is a guy that sounds like he is very confident about the upcoming season.
Oh, yeah.
Extremely
oh,
confident.
Yeah. He wants that spot at strong safety very much.
All right, let's close out the program with a few calls here. DeJesus is in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
DeJesus, what's happening?
Hey, how you guys doing? Happy draft day to you guys.
You too.
I'm very excited today. I have two quick statements. The first one, I heard the guy Chris call from New York, and he was kind of throwing Trey Waynes under the bus. I believe that's who we should get because nowadays the NFL became a passing league, and
right.
we don't know if Prince is going to come back healthy. DRC is. Also, too, Steve Spagnuolo, he might have some packages where he could throw him at safety, or even if he plays safety, he can come up to the line of scrimmage and still cover. I mean, I don't think
has played a pro style corner at Michigan State. That's how they play their cornerbacks. Okay, it's a man to man. It's a press coverage. It's get in your face and let's let him go cover that guy. He would be assigned to the best receiver every week at Michigan State, and he was told lock him down. And so, you know, he gets here to the NFL, that's not going to intimidate him at all because he has been made to play in a do-or-die situation throughout his years at Michigan
right.
State.
Right. And, when I heard him say that, I honestly think that's who we should get just because we don't know how DRC and Principal Kamara are going to come back, if they're going to come
right.
back 100%. And if not, we need somebody to be able to cover Dez Bryant and DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon.
Well, DeJesus, on top of that, remember, some teams throw out three wide receivers, so you may need to put an extra
exactly.
corner
four
out there.
Two.
Four,
exactly.
two, if you want to go that direction, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, Tremaine McBride, I don't see him being able to stop.
Well,
I mean, he did pretty good.
Tremaine McBride was
productive.
A solid
yeah.
player 2 years ago before he
yeah,
got
yeah,
hurt,
yeah.
and they can only hope that he's going to be healthy.
Yeah, exactly, only hope. So that's the biggest thing. Also, too, could you see us at least move back? Because I know they were saying I heard on ESPN that St. Louis wants a line. You think we can move back just in case we don't spend a ninth pick on Train Waves? They might think it's too high, and because St. Louis might want linemen, they'll move up and get the line. And you know that.
Well, I would only say this to you again. I think if you move down past 13, you're running the risk. And thank you so much for the call. I think you're really running the risk of not being able to get alignment that you really want if you move past 13. And then as far as Waynes goes, I think a lot of people believe his value is right around that 10 area. And so if you move down, you may not even get him if you move, you know, much further than where you are. So again, if Jerry has conviction, he's got to make the pick.
There's always risk involved when you move down
because
it's unpredictable. Final call of the program. Steve is in Georgia. Steve, what's happening?
Hi, guys. Love the show.
Appreciate that.
One question for you. I'm a sheriff man. I think, you know, I'm hoping that he's there. But if he's not there, you know, I know you're saying Waynes. But wouldn't we go for the next offensive lineman that's on our board? If it's close, right? There's clusters, right?
Right.
But if
there's clusters.
An offensive lineman behind it, like we were looking at Collins or the other guy from Miami, wouldn't we just plug him in? Because how much, you know, the other part two to this question is, how does this impact the rest of the draft? And you know, what position we pick, whether it's a cornerback or offensive lineman, does that not dictate what we get in the second and third round?
Not really.
And if we have a plan for the whole draft.
No, you can't. You can't pre-program the draft. That's how you get in trouble. Jerry Reese just told us the other day, and he says it every year, and George Young said it every year back in the 80s, if you go into the draft with a locked-in plan, you're making a horrible mistake because you have to expect the unexpected. You can't go in saying, we're going to absolutely get this, because you are going to be so upset. You're going to need so much Pepto-Bismol by the time the fifth hour is going in the first round of the draft. You have no chance to survive.
Yeah.
You have to have a flexible deal.
Paul, compared to me, Collins, Lyle Collins, and Sheriff, you know, as a guard, as a right tackle, and as left tackle, where would you, how would you rate the, how would you compare those two?
Okay, the positives, very simply, the notes that I wrote on Sheriff and Collins, for Sheriff, I had positives were power, nasty, motor, smart, running, blocking, and he finishes plays. All great positives, solid technique, polished player. I really don't have any flaws on him. If you want to look at any flaws, the lower body, not the greatest athlete in the world. He would admit to that. And, of course, he had the scope knee, and a lot of people thought he wasn't a great edge protector because of that. Maybe that slowed him down a little bit. That's the only thing. When you look at Collins, who I have as my second-rated offensive lineman on the board, I have mean and a power blocker listed for him. My questions were hand placement, which you can coach up, technique, which you can coach up, balance and agility, not as much, which is why I have him behind. I have him behind Sheriff, but I still have him as the second best offensive lineman on my ratings, and I think he can play tackle or guard. Then you have this other off the field thing, which again you have no idea. You have no idea.
On that one, right?
No idea how that computes.
Yeah. So thanks, God. I mean, my thought was I like this. You know, I agree with a lot with saying. I'm just thinking that I would just go up and take the next guy, next offensive lineman on my board. I think that's what I would do. I'm hoping we get a lineman. I know we could get one later in the draft, but I'm hoping for a good draft. Thanks,
well,
guys.
Steve, and appreciate the phone call. And just to answer what he came back with us, if you want to go after the next offensive lineman, Paul, but that offensive lineman is really down on your board, then that means that you're just going for need.
And you're reaching, and you're not going
after best player available. So I think when Steve throws that out, you have to be cautious that, hey, if the next offensive lineman is right below Sheriff, let's say, and they're neck and neck, that's one thing. If Sheriff is up here and then Collins or Flowers is down here, then you're really just going for need.
Which is why I've told people if Sheriff is off the board, I'm going to Trey Waynes, because I think Trey Waynes provides you more value potentially at number 9 in my eyes than Collins, who's the second best offensive lineman on my board. I'm putting value ahead of need there, and I'm saying that I take Waynes. I've made that very clear to everybody. So for all you folks out there, and you know what? I will say this. Last year, I got hammered by a lot of people, even more than 50-50 of our fans, who didn't want to take the offensive lineman. This year, I think about, what do you think, 85, nearly 90% are agreeing with me. They're thinking the Giants should take the offensive lineman, and most of them think that Sheriff is the guy. So I've seen a great swing in our fan base at the Giants that now seem to understand what I'm trying to explain to them. And for those of you who still don't like me looking offensive line, understand this. I am saying Waynes would be my second choice. I'm not offensive line 24/7. It's a big part of what I believe in, but I understand.
You weigh the value in addition to necessarily the need. And
weigh
the
value.
That's what the team is going to do as they get set to make the 9th overall selection. So as we close up shop here.
Promote the shows.
Yes, we do want to promote the shows. The fact that you have on MSG tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, you have First and 10.
MSG Plus?
Okay, MSG and Giants.com. So I was correct the first time. You can see it on the website, Giants.com, but in addition, in the local area, if you have MSG as part of your television package, you can see it there. So we'll have exclusive coverage leading up to the Giants selection. You'll have coach reaction, GM reaction, all that good stuff, as well as the first-round pick will be on the program, too, to react to being selected by the Giants. So a lot of good stuff, which you can stay locked to Giants.com to watch.
Big Blue Kickoff live again tomorrow at 12 o'clock.
Correct.
You're in with John.
Absolutely.
John and I will be doing the Giants' second-round draft pick show
Friday
7 o'clock on Friday evening. Then Saturday, 12 o'clock, is Big Blue Kickoff Live again as we approach the fourth round of the draft. And the Giants draft party, folks, remember, go to Giants.com, check out all the information to get your tickets for the Giants draft party on Saturday at MetLife Stadium. A lot of festivities going on. I hope the weather's good and everybody has a good time.
So a jam-packed next few days, and just a reminder, Big Blue Kickoff Live going into the weekend on Saturday, which is unique for us since we normally do it during
that time of year, baby. We're
absolutely
busy.
Absolutely. And we'll be back up and running on Monday again, providing full recap of the draft and more. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Appreciate all the calls, all the tweets. Enjoy the draft. A few hours away. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
So long.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
What a hit. No punch. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.